Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Gus, Gus always stresses, and also if you're familiar with Nelly Fuller, shadow boxing, and also going back and forth with other victims of white supremacy. So what was your code on the workplace with dealing with other black victims, black people that would kind of act against the interests of other black employees? Did you see that a lot on the workplace? And if you did, how did you interact with those other black officers, agents?
Okay, I'm just trying to answer the question correctly. So, one more time, please. I'm sorry.
Okay. Other black agents that may have not believed that racism was a problem on the force,
mm-hmm.
and they may mm-hmm. have acted in ways that worked against other black agents' mm-hmm. self-interest or safety without name calling. You know, nowadays people may refer to them as sellouts and, you know, mm-hmm. other derogatory terms for blacks who work against black self-interest on the workplace. How do you interact with agents that behave in that manner? Or have you ever seen that kind of behavior in the agent?
That was a major obstacle for me. That was a major obstacle for me. I just call them for the show mentally compromised black people.
For this context, I'm sorry for interrupting, Mr. Abdul Rahim. I was cracking up laughing the whole time because I have read his book, and I was like, "Uh-oh, let's see how he's gonna I think it would be important because we are about being truthful on the program, so. Let's maybe rewind and let's give a truthful answer because we are about being truthful. So let's give a truthful. I did give him a disclaimer about no name calling, right? So I think he is trying to respect the platform. So much obliged, much respect. Thank you so much. But let's go ahead and get a truthful answer to his question, sir.
Okay. So to answer that question, that was a major obstacle for me in my career. So I was caught between, you know, my people and my people who were pretty much, you know, just sellouts, you know. So what often happened is I would have mixed emotions. So there were, like you just like you asked, there were quite a few guys who didn't think that the atmosphere was as bad or as racist as it was. Sometimes some of these guys were clearly, you know, mentally compromised, and some of them were just, you know, doing what they call playing the game in order to, let's say, playing the game to get ahead or whatever. That was a rough one because, man, that was a real rough one. Got me thinking about it. So it was hard for me to even, you know, interact with some of my own people, because so many of these guys were They didn't. Quite a few of them. There are some stand up black men and women that I've met in the U.S. Secret Service, but most of them that I've met were only stand up around other black people. And when they got around, you know, these white people, their white daddies or whoever, they always turned into popcorn shrimp. And it was really hard because if something is going on and you have this way that you're going to deal with a particular person or a particular incident, and you go about it the right way, in the way that you're supposed to go about it. And I'm not talking about, you know, swinging on people and busting heads and nothing like that. Let's just say addressing it or sending an email or contacting the EEO counselor. This was often looked at as radical behavior because we were often judged not as individuals, but as groups of people. So if there's a person, another, you know, black person that came before me, and he did the whole buck dance and the whole dog and pony show for these people, once I come behind him and I don't do that, I'm a rebel. I'm a bad employee. I'm not a team player. This is pretty much what happened. This is what happens in these type of workplaces, these type of work environments. Dealing with people who didn't think things were as bad as they were, I stayed away from them, man. I didn't want to have conflict with my own people, so I pretty much would speak to them, you know, give them their respect. Hey, how you doing? What's up? And I would keep it moving. I tried not to get too involved and being buddy, but I didn't attend the events with them. I made sure that I didn't go, you know, participate in certain events with my own people. I didn't like the fact that we couldn't do anything to make progress or combat some of the white supremacy and racism at work. And I felt that if we wasn't going to do that, it was no reason for me to sit around, you know, after hours and do anything, whether it be a get together, a party or anything, you know. My thing was, I kind of stayed away. I didn't want to have conflict with my people, but I just couldn't get down with them outside of work for those reasons right there. And that's how I dealt with them. I tried to keep it respectful, but I had to stay away outside of work. Because to me, it's that's just fake to me. It's fake. My thing was, our people are in here getting dog walked by these white supremacists every day. And outside of work, all we could do was sit back and laugh, have sports talk, and eat wings and carry on and giggle and talk about what they're doing, but we're not going to do nothing about it. I just couldn't get with it. So my thing was just to stay away outside. You know, I didn't participate in, you know, the extracurricular activities that black people had outside of work, black coworkers, and some of them I liked. You know, most of them I would say I probably liked. I mean, there were a few that I disliked, but most of our people I liked, but I couldn't. It wasn't something that I was going to do. I couldn't participate in you know, and be involved in these things because it was just such a battle for me. It was a rough battle, you know, to know that, you know, it's almost like, how could you be so scared of these people? You know, how could you be so scared? Like, we're not going to do anything. This person did this. We're not going to do nothing about it. And I just wasn't wired like that. I just couldn't do it, you know? So my thing was just to stay away. It was rough. That was one of the roughest parts because I expected different, you know, at least a little different. I just didn't know that. I didn't know that men were that scared. It was shocking to me. And it was a new experience for me to see men who were that scared. I don't know, man. I just didn't get it.
Much obliged.
All right. Thanks a lot, bro.
Much obliged.
No problem.
Let's see. If you had a question, don't lollygag, *61. If you have a question for Mr. Abdul Rahim, who does use the word coon in the book liberally, and sell out.
Yeah, man, I was holding off. Hey, I was trying to respect the disclaimer. You know, hey, check this out. I even wrote mentally compromised down a piece of paper right in front of me. I'm dead scared. I can't make this up. I said, man, I can't use my words. let me respect the show. So I literally have it wrote down on a piece of paper. mentally compromised, just to remind myself not to use coon or sellout or, you know, bellhop.
Context and white supremacy.
You know what? I have
Miriam Carey, but before I get to Miriam Carey, you do talk about, as I said, coon is used liberally in the book. You do talk about one black coworker that you had a lot of difficulty with, or not difficulty with, but a black, I guess, would be representative of this Jubilee Alexander black male who would do, I guess, a lot of smiling and the exact opposite of what you would do, smiling and joking with white people and engaging in all of their racist stereotypes about black people and that. So, yeah, soul plate is on. Woohoo. Let's watch it. I'm going to do all the jokes right along. This is the best thing ever. Woohoo. Let's get wings and have a good time. Let's watch the sequel, too. What was, this is where the counter racist logic for me kicks in, is that I ask, and I would put this to listeners too, at the United States Secret Service, what was Jubilee Alexander in charge of?
Well, Jubilee Alexander is in charge of, it's just, of course, you know, I had to protect identities. So, you know, I have to switch names around, but this guy, was pretty much, somebody from the top all the way to the bottom, a representative of a certain type of black man.
Oh, but wait a minute. The question was, what was he in charge of? Or if he's still working, what is he in charge of?
What is he in charge of?
Yes, sir. In terms of the United States Secret Service.
He's just an officer in the Secret Service.
So
he's not particularly in charge of, you know, it, as far as a title or, He's not somebody who's a high-ranking guy.
You know? Okay. That right there, in terms of counter-racist logic, the same counter-racist logic that you used in saying, you know what, I'm not going to give these guys any advance notice that the Secret Service folks are coming to talk to them. That's the same logic that I use that, you know what, regardless of how many stories that he tells about the white women that he slept with at the strip club, no matter how many jokes that he tells to these white people, no matter what he does, if he actually literally comes in and breaks out breakdancing, literally, on the floor, he is not in charge of anything. I do not need to pay attention to him at all. I wouldn't care if he came in and did breakdancing with fried chicken in MC Hammer pants every day, and then he changed it up, came in the next week and said, I'm gonna do Drake this week, every day, with fried chicken and watermelon, every day. He's not in charge of anything. So all of the, I ask victims of racism that, I think that is, you know, something we need to examine. Like, our time and energy cannot be focused on people who really don't have any power in the system of racism, white supremacy. If Jubilee Alexander, irritating though he may be, if he's not really in charge of anything, then, you know, let's get back to the racist instructor over here who is, you know, making it disqualifying folks left and right. Like, that is someone that, we're going to need to neutralize. Like, this could be the end of our career right here with it. But anyway, Miriam Carey. Miriam Carey. Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, March 15, 2019. So I have been told. This is our weekly broadcast, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. Technically, this is our second broadcast of the week on workplace racism. You just heard Muhammad Abdul Rahim, author of The N-Word is No Secret in the Service. He was a guest on the program this past Tuesday talking about his tenure in the United States Secret Service. The entire broadcast pretty much was about workplace racism. That's what his book is all about. The different varieties of racism he experienced working as a Secret Service agent, and even some workplace details from before he started working at the Secret Service. The book talks about many of the things that we talk about on this here broadcast, workplace racism, every week. Policy and procedure. That was a big one I didn't even get to in the interview. I'm hoping we can get him back on the program to just continue the workplace racism discussion, because He talked about what to do if you're going through the interview process. We talked about that last week, being subjected to a polygraph, what to do if you have aggravating non-white coworkers, what to do if you have racist supervisors, what to do if they're applying different standards to you, what to do if they are not compensating you correctly, particularly as it relates to overtime pay. All of the things that we do. Oh, I didn't see sexual harassment. Might have to back up one. I didn't see sexual harassment, although Area 8 did come up on the interview, but many of the topics that we discuss, topics, problems that we discuss every week on this broadcast are discussed in the book. We went over a lot this past Tuesday. You can go back in the archives to hear Mr. Abdul Rahim. But again, this is like our second program on workplace racism for the week. So if you missed that one, make sure you participate this time around. The number is 641-715-3600. 40, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Again, remembering the Cal's Yoga Retreat, attempting to do retreat number 2 in California, July 3rd through the 7th. Email if you need more details. The first time around, the Virginia retreat, we talked all about workplace racism the entire time. And one of the things that was stated was people feeling reluctant for a lot of reasons participating in workplace racism. If you do not want to join the live discussion but have problems that you would like addressed or have comments that you would like to share, untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. You can drop an email. We can keep it anonymous if you do not want to be identified. That way you don't have to worry about people identifying your voice. Untiljustice@gmail.com. We certainly, if any folks out there have figured out a code, some things to help them solve problems in the workplace, you should not be a spectator. If you have figured out some things, hey, this at least has helped me. It has been effective for me in backing racists up. If they were trying to mistreat me or mess over my schedule or anything on the job, and it seemed to work, help you solve problems without creating new problems, you should share. Even before I get to emails, lots of folks did email. Untiljustice@gmail.com. Just quickly, Mr. Muhammad, thank him so much for being a guest on the program to discuss his book. And again, hopefully we can have him as a guest on the program again in the future. But I thought that was so important. The segment that you just shared, he had several segments. I could have played the entire interview and that could have been our workplace racism for the week. But I thought that particular segment was so important because we, victims of white supremacy, get so frustrated in general, and it seems to me, especially in workplace environments, we can get so frustrated with other non-white people and how they are responding to racism in that environment. If they're being rude to us personally, and sometimes I see the frustration where it's not even that the non-white person is being rude to us per se. It's not like they are messing over our paycheck personally or reducing our hours or trying to obstruct us from getting a promotion or a raise. It's not like they're doing these things. It's not like the non-white person even has the power to do those things. Sometimes it'll just be that they come in and they're a victim of racism. You know, they are a mentally compromised individual. That's classic moment in Cal's history where, you know, they maybe they are doing a lot of laughing and joking with the white people. Maybe they do come in with a bucket of KFC chicken and an 8 mask and a banana. This is how I'm going to spend my lunch. I got a whole plan. It's going to be the greatest show in the history of the world. Best thing since Empire. Maybe. I'm not going to be frustrated and sit there, that coon, I can't believe it, coming in. Got a fresh sack of banana. I'm not going to sit in here and name call and get angry with another black person, even if it looks like their black self-respect has been annihilated. And that's what that is. that is a victim of white supremacy. That is someone whose self-respect has been totally annihilated. That being the case, how much logical sense does it make for me to invest all this emotional energy being frustrated and angry, and I'm going to call them names and I'm going to give them dirty looks every time they come by, and I'm going to spend at least 15 minutes every evening when I get a boy, that coon Roger, I can't believe what he did today, and wait till I tell. You could do that. I just haven't seen where that solves any problems. And remembering the most critical aspect, now again, even if this is the coon of the century, what is this person in charge of? If the answer is nothing, what they say, absolutely nothing. If that's the answer, well, then, you know, we got to find some racists who are causing problems to invest time and energy there in figuring out how to solve a problem, as opposed to just being frustrated with how another victim of white supremacy is responding to racism, another victim of white supremacy whose black self-respect has been annihilated. Crucially important segment, I thought, from Mr. Abdul Rahamid's interview, and just how frequently, I've seen this for years, it happens to a lot of us, I think it's a part of our conditioning, how easy it is for us to get very, 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 very frustrated with other black people, especially in the workplace. Continuing, quick addition just before I move on to folks who wrote in with email commentary. In the workplace, or I say it in general, and then we'll get to the workplace. So in general, I think regularly sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy, especially in the workplace. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. And I add that just because, in general, sobriety would be best, I say consistently, you want to have all your faculties. We're in a system, war is being waged against us. You don't want to be in a situation where you're fighting a superior opponent, and we most certainly are, because we're not even fighting. We just have a superior enemy waging war against us while most of our troops are confused. In that sort of situation, you do not want to add to the problem where you are not thinking at your best because you're intoxicated, you've imbibed some of white's poisons. In a workplace setting, I would just say in general, even if you're not on the clock per se, because they got happy hour and all that a lot of times, these are coworkers, colleagues. You never know who's going to get promoted in a workplace situation, even if they're a non-white person. You don't want to be in a situation where you are intoxicated with someone who might at some point have input on whether or not you're going to get a raise, input on whether or not you're going to get a promotion, input on whether or not you're going to get fired. I would rather not be in contact with that person when I am intoxicated, even if we're not at work. Let's say we're at, you know, Mary's wedding. We all got invited. She's been working here 10 years, so she invited us all. Fine. Even there, I'm drinking water. We're at the Christmas party. I got to go. I'm trying to get this promotion. I want to keep the office. They move, you know, the chairs around. So I want to keep the position where I'm at currently. So I'm going to go to the Christmas party for 30 minutes. I'm going to be sober the whole time. Let's say you're in Washington State. Let's say you're in Colorado. Let's say you're in Washington, D.C. Probably more states coming soon. Areas where they have legalized cannabis. I am certain they have office parties where they have THC laced cupcakes or jelly beans or potato chips or whatever it is. I wouldn't consume any of that, even with other colleagues, even if they were non-white individuals. I just would not. That is, as they say, that is not a good look for the workplace. I think we talk consistently on this program about being serious. You got all kinds of recording devices, Alexa. You just have no idea how that could be used. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. That would be an ironclad part of my workplace code. I am never under any circumstances going to be intoxicated with anybody that I work with, white or not white. Moving forward. Now, folks who wrote in, the email untiljustice@gmail.com. First email, non-white female victim of racism. It's astounding how bold and nosy white people are. First, I warn you that all the names in this report have been changed to protect both the innocent and the guilty. As I was sitting at my desk, totally oblivious that a company-wide meeting was soon to start, Brett, a white male manager that sits across the hall from me, stopped by my desk to remind me about the meeting. I got up and started walking with him. We also swung by Raj's desk to remind him of the meeting. As we are walking, Brett started pumping Ra for personal information. First, he asked him about his nationality, and Raj indicated that he was from India. Then Brett starts talking about his best friend, who is also Indian, about some tasty dish that his friend always prepares, the food. Raj said that he'd heard of the dish and enjoys it, but doesn't prepare it because he's a terrible cook. Raj also stated that his wife does all the cooking. Brett then asked Raj if his wife was also Indian, to which Raj responded, no. Now, granted, I also wanted to know if Raj was married to an Indian female. I like to get a sense of how white-identified the non-white people around me are. However, Raj is a new employee, and I wasn't going to get all in his personal life right away. Luckily, I didn't have to, because Brett took care of that for me. When we entered the meeting room, Raj broke away from us and sat with other employees in his own department. With a twinkle in his eye, Brett leaned closer to me and a white female that he supervises and said, since he didn't sit with us, we can make racist jokes about him. He's Indian. I'll pause right here. I would just write that in my journal. This is a great opportunity. I don't say this is the best way to handle it, but this would be a great opportunity for those. I'm always a fan of the repeat. If you have your notes for people who have the recorder, if you like to just jot notes down. Oh, excuse me, Brett, could you repeat that, sir? And just write it down. Write date, time, Brett says, oh, we can make racist jokes about Raj. He's Indian. Okay. And then we proceed. Oh, yeah, let's hear the joke. You got one ready to roll? Let's hear it. And you got your pen or your recorder, you ready to roll? You don't have to be that flagrant. You can just write it down. Racist jokes, we're at the meeting, boom, boom, boom. Already started my note-taking early, ready to roll. Continuing with the email. The meeting then commenced with the CEO talking about how profitable the company was and how we're primed for serious growth. What troubled me was the slide that he presented, and he was talking about growth. He asked us if we remembered our 8th grade social studies class and said that it was manifest destiny that our company grow and dominate our industry by gobbling up our competitors. He then started explaining the concept of manifest destiny, strategically omitting the fact that the concept is rooted in the ideology of white supremacy. I briefly panned the room to catch a glimpse of everyone's face as he was talking. Most of the white people looked happy and smug, while the non-white people looked bored. The racism didn't end with those events. After the meeting, I was back at my desk doing online research of Florida's court system because I needed to electronically file some documents. We got experts of the Florida court system right here. When I came to St. Lucie County's website, I found the following image of a pack of monkeys handling money. The caption says, "Claim your cash. We got your Benjamins," all in quote. I could be overreaching, but I really think that this image is intended as a racist joke. I asked one of my black female coworkers what she thought about the image. She also believes it to be a big racist joke. The image that's, you know, claim your cash, it has this group of monkeys. Uh-oh, I didn't even play the UPS segment. It's got this group of monkeys. And they all have shirts on, and they're playing with $1 bills. It says, claim your cash, we got your Benjamins. State of Florida. Got residents down there. I guess they can comment if they've seen this. That's interesting that this would be going out, be sent out over work. Anyway, I too think this is something racist. I would just file it away. In my workplace journal, as I did everything that was said at the meeting about the company saying that their strategy is in line with manifest destiny, which absolutely is the ideology of white supremacy, terrorism, domination, absolutely. The racist jokes, you got it all. And if anything, I would just say, I think this person wrote about the other non-white people being bored. or maybe not really grasping the significance of some of the things that are being said, the images that are being passed around. I think that just puts you in a better position in terms of knowing why you need to be on alert on a constant basis, why it is not fun and games and joking around, but taking this very seriously, because you have people who are bragging, boasting publicly about their commitment to white supremacy racism and those ideals, and that's what they want to continue to enforce with their company and their growth strategy. Even reminded me of Delectable Negro as they gobble up the competition. Much obliged, person who wrote in that commentary. Going down the list, I'll get in one more, and then I'll get to the rest. Incidentally, the person who wrote in last week, Kizzy's cousin, she requested assistance with interview techniques, strength-based interviews. We actually had more people write in saying, ooh, I would like help with that too. So if we have folks who have assistance in that area, please drop an email and I will forward. There are multiple people who would be interested in assistance in that area. Next email. My story for the week. For this week is my white female manager who is married to a black male and has two non-white sons is back terrorizing me. Insert cowbell. I was out with a medical issue. I came back with an obvious temporary disability that's hard to miss. I am physically attached to a machine. When I first came back, I wasn't terrorized. As weeks went on, this racist white woman started coming over to me and angrily asking me, when will I be done with my therapy? Nearly every day, even though I gave them my schedule. When she finally decides to look at the schedule, not surprising, towards the end of her terrorism got worse. A black client was transferred to me. Now his account was handled by a white person and has only been touched by a white person until he got to me. All those incompetent white people really screwed him over because the mistake they made with him is going to cost him a lot of money. The company is going to get fined and the many complaints will be served. None of this was the black client's fault. The only reason why the crucial mistake was found was because he was mistakenly transferred to me because the white person assigned to him did not want to do their job that day, probably or many of the other days as it relates to this black client. I can't authorize anything, can't make any decisions on this customer's account since he is not my client. All I could do is really information to the right person to get this rectified. After speaking with the black client, I was able to relay his info to a non-white, non-black woman who is a lawyer on our team. She quickly fixed the issue so the client would not continue losing money. I'm speaking thousands, but the damage has been done. My white female boss finds out what's going on with the black client and nearly at the speed of light tries to run to me to reprimand me, but the non-white, non-black lawyer told her to back off since none of this catastrophe was due to me. I only caught the mistake before it got worse. So the white female boss leaves because she doesn't want to reprimand another racist. She went through a whole bunch of files I worked on years ago to find a mistake. She was able to find a mistake, which was 2 years ago. Instead of listing the client's name, last name, first name, I did the opposite. And this was 10 minutes of her trying to reprimand me for making a mistake. And somehow I keep making the same mistakes over and over, which is a lie. My white female boss spent the next day monitoring me, looking for any mistake she can speak to me about. It is non-stop abuse. As I previously stated, I have a temporary disability, which is hard to miss. My white coworkers are angry that they have to do their own work. These are the same whites who go around telling people I don't know anything. Since I have been back, I vowed I will not help any of them, even if my white female boss is trying to assign things for them to me. I found a way to get around it. Now that I don't help them, they have been crumbling. They are getting in trouble by the supervisor of the whole department for not meeting metrics, for doing things incorrectly, for making too many errors. They complain they are being harassed by the supervisor, but when you look at their work, it's tragic, crappy, and terrible. Can you imagine getting a certified letter from your bank full of spelling mistakes and grammar errors? Can you imagine a check being sent to you, meant for you, but in someone else's name? Wow. Whoa, beyond tacky. My last part, the racist file room lady who has a very heavy accent gets to work overtime just to pay her rent, was watching me the whole time until I was no longer connected to my medical device. Once I walked in without the device, she came to me with the same sob story of her having so much work to do, she needs help. What annoyed me was that she came to me and said, I was speaking with the racist white female boss and designing a plan of what you can do for me. That really irked me because she is the only one in our department who gets true overtime, meaning over 40 hours a week. I told her non-black, non-white coworker about this, and she told me this racist file room lady stayed overtime and spent the whole time joking with other coworkers in the department, making coffee and going out for snacks for over an hour doing her overtime stay. The non-white, non-black woman was not supposed to stay overtime, but the racist whites did not see her and attempted to go through her desk and garbage when they walked over. They actually jumped because they did not expect her to be there. Back to the racist file room lady, when my department wants to punish me to feel good as they are practicing racism, they will have me do her work in the file room while she is out for the day. I was able to complete everything in 2 hours, yet this lady tries to play victim because she has so much work to do. She does this every day. She does this every day. She's here trying to get me to do her work. Even when I do help her, my racist white female boss says I'm not a team player right after I have completed her work. End of report. Very detailed. The treachery of white women is boundless. For that accusation that you are not a team player, I think that's a great opportunity to ask two questions, really. Number one, what do you mean when you say team player? And what things specifically would I need to do to demonstrate that I am a team player? I think those are two great questions to ask, because that is a metaphor, team player. I didn't think this was a team. What sport are we playing exactly? Am I Colin Kaepernick? Details, I guess, if you are listening, if you would like to add, maybe you can write in any details you would like to add about how you, the code that you are using that has seemed to be effective, so that you don't have to help other white people on the job, because that's very common. White people claiming that they're victims, white men and women saying that they're victims, and, you know, I've got arthritis and tendonitis and Ebola, and, you know, I need some help. I'm just swamped. Can you get, you know, 8 or 12 of these Negroes to come in and help me get my work done? And then the black people end up doing all the work. If you figured out a way to get around that, where you are not having to help them when they moan and cry and the work is just being returned to them, that they got to do their own work, and then on top of that, they're getting in trouble because of their incompetence, spectacular. Do more of it. If anybody else can figure out ways where you are not having whites, where you can figure out ways so that whites are not able to pawn their work and tasks off on you, phenomenal. That is the type of codification that we need in the workplace. And just the tackiness of this, them seeing that you are in a weakened position, and that not being a time for, oh, let's have celebration and let's take care of you and let's buy you lunch and let's take some of your work away from you. It's the exact opposite. That's the system of racism, white supremacy, just having an expectation that that's going to be what it is. Even when it comes to them coming to fuss, they've messed over this black client, probably practicing racism deliberately against him too, or whoever the person is too. And then you catch these errors and they come at you. That is another one. The importance of keeping your composure, not getting emotional, understanding this is a race soldier. This is what I expect them to do. They falsely charge black people all the time. I'm already prepared for this, to point out, no, ma'am, actually, it looks like, well, you don't have to name names, but it looks like the errors were actually made before the report actually got to me. I have the dates of the supposed infractions here, here, and here, and this is the date when I got the case, and would be more than happy to review the information for you with the attorney who, she said, came to her defense to say, no, this nigger did not make any errors. Other folks made some major mistakes in this one that are costing a black client thousands of dollars. not an accident. And something to keep in mind, I guess, for folks as you use your banking institutions, probably not something that has only happened one time where they make these quote unquote errors that have cost a black person thousands of dollars. Other folks wrote in. We'll get to those as we proceed. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. If you have thoughts, if you have a specific code that you use to minimize problems, conflict with other non-white people on the job, that would be great. If you have thoughts about our frustrations and our tendency to overboil at other non-white people in a workplace situation, that is certainly timely for today, given our commentary, what we heard from Mr. Abdul Rahim. If you have commentary on what any of the folks who wrote in had to share, that would be appreciated as well. Star 61 if you would like to participate. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I hope everyone is doing their best on this Friday in system white supremacy. Let's see. I have a couple of stories over the course of the last couple of weeks. So first, I will start with a trip to the eye doctor. About 2 weeks ago, I went to go do my annual eye checkup. And for the most part, there was nothing much to it. But for the first time in 3 years that I've been going to my current doctor, a white male who usually has white female workers around him, he had hired a black female. First time I've seen a black woman work in that place since I've been going there. And at some point, when I was about to check out a couple weeks ago, the black woman was checking me out to see what type of glasses I would like to get. And what happened was one of the white women walked over to the both of us and looked at me and said, "Is she giving you a hard time?" And then the black woman just simply laughed. And I just didn't react. I didn't have a smile on my face. Didn't even laugh along with the joke. I didn't find it funny. And then As she continued to check me out, this white woman is now all the way across the room away from the both of us, and she continues to make that kind of joke. And as I'm sitting in front of the black woman who's checking me out, she just simply shakes her head in disgust. Next story. A couple of weeks ago, I was walking out of my hallway at work. And one of the people who works on the planning commission walked by, and I addressed him accordingly. And he actually took the time to stop a moment to talk to me. And then he decided to shake my hand for whatever reason. As he was shaking my hand, he also, we're doing a right-to-right handshake hold. And with his left hand, he grabs my elbow. So at that moment, I asked him to please not touch my elbow. And then after he let go, I asked him the question, "Why did you touch my elbow?" And he said to me, "Because your arm was moving," to which I responded, "That doesn't make any sense. The act of shaking someone's hand means by definition your arm is moving." At that point, he asked where a certain department was, and we parted ways. Next story. Me and my wife were at a friend's housewarming party, and this woman whose house we were at, she is in the military. I'm not sure if she'd retired from the military, but a good amount of her family are also in the military as well too. And I was speaking about I was speaking to one of her female cousins who is currently pregnant with her second child. And she told me that while stationed in Germany at some point with her first child, that she received more than adequate medical care, more so than you might find here in the States. And she also told me and my wife of stories where if anyone acts in a racist manner, that people in Germany will react very swiftly to punish you and even arrest you. To me and my wife, that was a bit confusing because it gave the impression that people in Germany are working hard to root out racism. And I personally did not think this to be true, but this was their perception of how it is to be a black person in Germany. I'm not really sure how black males are treated in Germany. And then my final story is earlier this week during work, I took some, well, during my lunch period, I went to the doctor's office and I had my annual checkup because I have asthma. Now, I've been reading or listening to the study book for medical apartheid, which is, in my opinion, one of the worst books I've ever read because of the subject matter. It's a good book. It is horrible to read. So I go through my asthma checkup. My vitals are what they were last year. Not any worse, not any better, but they could be better. And but my I had a slightly elevated blood pressure. And my doctor, who is an Asian male, says because of my blood pressure, which registered at about 136 over 80 or 82, I believe, he said that, you know, you might have to be careful what you eat. You know, maybe you're eating too much salt. Maybe you're not exercising. A whole bunch of other stuff that might go with having high blood pressure. And he said that, you know, as a black, you know, as a black, as an African American, that, you know, black, you know, black people have, unreasonably high blood pressure and heart disease issues, and that I should be careful. And that if I'm not, I might have to go on high blood pressure medication, to which I said, no, I'm not doing that. To me, what was interesting about this is, like, I'm not sure how he got to that conclusion so fast. So first and foremost, a year before when I got my checkup, my blood pressure was normal. And that it was at 120 over 80, a normal range. And before, a year before that, it was a bit elevated, but it's because of my asthma and acid reflux, which had come down, bringing down my blood pressure. And but I was deeply disturbed by the doctor's assumption that my blood pressure in its current form was the result of me doing something that was, worsening my health in some kind of way. Disturbed as I was, I went ahead and called my wife, and I told her what the doctor had said, and she just called it just basically this garbage. And we both decided from then that point on, for now, when either one of us has a doctor's appointment, that both of us should go together to be in the room with the doctor at the same time. I also called my mother. I actually spoke with her today and told her the exact same thing. And then as I'm talking to my mother, I realized that right before I went to the doctor's office, I had stopped at Walmart. I had to get something for Walmart for my wife. And between a Walmart to Big Store, I walked around quite a bit to get what I needed. From Walmart to the doctor's office was about a 3-minute drive. In that amount of time, my heart rate is easily still elevated from me just walking around Walmart. And to me, this goes to show you that, you know, you go into the doctor's office, they see something, they think something is off about your numbers, and they quickly say, oh, you got to get on this medication. As I was setting my appointment for my annual checkup for next year, I couldn't help but to notice that there was a sign saying, if you want to be a part of any kind of studies, feel free to sign up. Now, this was interesting because when I was walking out of the place, I did notice that there were a large number of black people who come in and out of this specific doctor's office. And with that, I will end my time.
Wow. Non-Clemson grad, one of the participants at the aforementioned Virginia 2019 COWS Yoga Retreat, where workplace racism dominated. Let's see, going to the first vignette, tacky, Mr. Fuller, like, triple T's, tacky, so many of these incidents. I mean, it's just tacky to come out and, oh, she's not giving you a hard time, is she? Now that he's got a black female working up there. It can't be, oh, is she doing great work? I'm so happy to have her. She's only been working here a short period. She doing all right. It can't be that. Like, just cordial, wonderful, normal routine office talk. Goes, oh, she's doing something wrong. We can get her out of here. Get a new one. And I think for those type of situations, I'm reminded of Dr. Cambon. And I mean, nothing incorrect. I'm just saying, you know, racists do that sort of thing on a regular basis. I think another one they'll say, stay out of trouble, is one that I think they'll say to black people in a work context. Is she giving you any trouble? That type of thing. Is she giving you a hard time? to always look for ways where we can complement a Black person's work performance in the workplace. Taking that directly from Dr. Kanban, like in that sort of context, since the question has been asked, absolutely not. She is doing a phenomenal job. I've been so impressed with your new secretary. What's your name, ma'am? Oh, yes, Miss Rogers. She's doing fantastic work. Hope she's, you know, here a long time. To always give exemplary compliments to Black people in the workplace setting in front of white people to make that a part of the counter-racist code. Medical apartheid. I think other people said that about medical apartheid in Gus's top five. That it is difficult reading material, very sad. It's just, you know, reading about centuries, really, of white people terrorizing. The Coon Man, basically, centuries of the Coon Man. Black people, white people in white medical coats terrorizing Black people deliberately for fun. The Coon Man. But very important information that is relevant to what's happening right now, March 2019. Speaking of books and medical apartheid, Dying While Black, Vernelia Randall, has been a guest on the program repeatedly. That is one of the suggestions that she gives in that book, that anytime if you have to go to the doctor's office, hospital, whatever it is, to make sure that you take a healthy Black person with you, just so that they can ask questions and come, like when they said, oh my goodness, you know, you got heart trouble here. My goodness, I don't know what's going on here. Might have to get you on this high blood pressure medication. Just, you certainly can, but it always can be helpful to have someone there who is just an observer. They don't have any health issues. I'm just here to watch, ask questions, and that's my counter-racist mode, that can be helpful. You have an extra set of eyes, an extra set of ears. I think that's a great recommendation from Professor Vernelia Randall to employ. I know some other listeners have used that themselves when going to the doctor's office or whatever it happens to be. Much obliged, non-Clemson grad. And I think that's even come up before. I think Mr. Demery Four about walking around and then you have to go and have some sort of checkup, especially if it's they're checking your heart rate, see if you have high blood pressure or high blood pressure, where I think Mr. Demery Four said he was required for his job. He had to get some sort of checkup or what have you. And they would have the Black people stressed out. They would come asking them questions or acute something. They would do something to have them riled up before they went in. And then they would go get their checkup and be like, oh, my goodness, your heart rate is. Woo. And I mean, since this is part of the job, that might be grounds for terminating you. I think they've had that sort of thing where that seems to be a racist pattern. To get Black people's heart rate all elevated, and then they go in for the checkup. Like, oh my gosh, you know. In addition to all the terrorism that they dump on us on a daily basis, but that is something I guess to be mindful of what you are doing and how you are treated if you are going in for something blood pressure related, doctor's office. Number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Proceed. Let's see. While folks are taking their time spectating, I will nab some of the other folks who jotted down emails to share. Let's see, I lost my tab. Let's see. Oh, and I have the UPS thing. I forgot while folks are spectating. I don't know if people saw. I tried to post it. I'll get the UPS clip in a few seconds. The UPS, there was about 19 workers. It was a big report in Ohio, right in Nevada. 19 workers at a UPS facility in Ohio. They reported being subjected to ongoing patterns of white supremacy, racism in the workplace, nooses, and everything else that you would come to expect. Triple T. But we'll include the audio as we proceed. Other folks who wrote in for workplace racism this week. This person. Okay, so they're using the title. Evolutionist for justice. Evolutionist for justice. Okay, so they wrote in, this is a non-white male. I recently began working with a new client at a gym I do private training in. He was a suspected white supremacist who, masquerading as a public school teacher of history and social studies. During my first 3 sessions with him, I was codified enough to not give him any room to practice racism via chit-chat. Chit is, I believe, associated with manure or feces. Unfortunately, the slave mentality for validation slipped in one day, and I told him to tell me about his job. I quickly got him to admit that, historically, white supremacy racism is practiced through omission of the critical information black people lack and the system of white supremacy racism withholds. After he talked too long, using cunning metaphor after metaphor about teaching disadvantaged kids as an uphill battle, I cut him off after about 6 to 10 minutes and asked, "Do you tell black children that the most difficult thing they will face is white people in every endeavor of life? Do you tell them that you and your people, white people, are the biggest challenge they will face in life?" He said, "No, not exactly. Well, no, I don't." So I reminded him that he admitted to me that white supremacy racism is historically practiced by withholding information from non-white black people. He nodded. I said, clearly, with a calm tone, but I was aware that this was a critical moment between myself and this racist, "Then you can't talk to me anymore about your being a teacher, because you can't be both. You're either practicing white supremacy racism or you're a teacher. Telling children all they need to know for developing their genetic potential." Then I told him I'd see him next session as we grabbed a thing and headed for the door since it was the end of our session. I guess I mainly did it because I sensed his anticipation. He kept trying to teach me something he was discussing with his students about slavery to practice racism with his moralizing about being a teacher. He hasn't said a word about teaching a damn thing since, but I see him again Saturday, so I suspect he'll try a new tactic. Asking questions early is a key to neutralizing some common practices when we have to deal with them in a one-on-one situation. And I combined what I learned from Mr. Fuller and Dr. Welsing. I used every word he said against him. He didn't expect me to use sequential logic to tie his reasoning together in order to sum it up as white supremacy racism. I'm still learning not to get emotional. We all are. Been reading about it for a couple of years, but application is another discipline to be developed and managed. Absolutely. Critical. I will say, I know for a lot of people, they probably might not be advisable. In fact, I say consistently not to talk about racism, white supremacy on the job, to just ask questions. But if you are in a situation where you are able to ask these sort of questions, they're bringing up racism, white supremacy, and willing to talk about it, ask away. Ask anytime that you get to a moment where you're feeling comfortable questioning whites about racism, white supremacy. Go ahead and let those questions fly, especially if you are with someone classified as white who is willing to answer. Oh, yeah. Let them ride. Let them ride. But that's great. What an exchange in a workplace environment. And if this is happening, I guess, in a gym setting, I guess, well, I don't know. Since he's doing private training, I don't know if this was just you are the only 2 people at the gym, or if it's just you all do your private training, although it's at a public gym while other people are there, because I know that happens also. If that is the case, and there are other race soldiers who are hearing this, wow. That would be something that I would put a pin in, that, you know, they might try to We do have a Voltron, as they say. It's been my experience that when racism, white supremacy is being discussed like that in a public environment where a black person is involved, the other whites, I mean, you talk about nosy, that was mentioned before. Wow. It doesn't have to be workplace. It could just be random strangers on the street. If they hear that a Negro sounds like they might be trying to talk about solving this problem, they will stop and begin paying attention. I've had this happen personally myself. I've seen it repeatedly. So that would be something to be mindful of. I don't know if you work at this gym on a regular basis, but if other whites are hearing this conversation, I would definitely expect that they are paying very close attention, probably paying a lot more close attention to you, and maybe even looking to cause you problems in the future. Keep us posted. I know you said you were going to be working with this client again, perhaps Saturday, the weekend sometime. I guess you can let us know and maybe give us more details. If you work at the studio on a regular basis, if you have any concerns about some of the other whites who work there overhearing this conversation and maybe making trouble for you in the workplace, that's something I would encourage other non-white people to be mindful of, period. If you're talking to another white person, that the other whites in that environment are listening, whether it's Alexa or whatever they got, a cup and a piece of string, like whatever, they are probably snooping in on the chit chat. The cows, other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary to share, lines should be open. Proceed.
May I be heard?
Greetings, Ivy.
Greetings, Gus, and greetings to all the callers on the line. I wish I hadn't missed Mr. Muhammad as well as the book club. I'm going to get back to Mr. Muhammad in a minute, but I want to share something that happened, or a couple of things that happened volunteering with the Race Soldier. I ended up volunteering at a different location because she couldn't be there for whatever reason. And when my friend told her, she asked how it went, when she told her, you know, how it went and that I came, she said, it must have been a circus over there because it's usually very busy over there. But what she was doing is she was calling me an animal indirectly. Also, that I believe it was that same day, she looked at me because she was sitting next to me because we volunteer together and do the same task. She looked at me and she said, you know, there's some Africans that I was talking to and they just have these really long names. And she was just laughing. And I just looked at her as though I was listening. I did not smile. I did not laugh. I doubt very seriously. I mean, I wasn't using a mirror, so I wouldn't know this, but I doubt very seriously that I even looked like I was even tempted to laugh or crack a smile, because obviously usually when someone is laughing or they're smiling, the natural response is to do the same. That's like a normal, I think, biological response. But I was not tempted in that way because of, you know, what I've learned from this broadcast and, you know, some other resources. I was just, you know, very disgusted. And when she saw that I wasn't laughing or interested or smiling or anything, she said it again, and she was laughing. And I had the same reaction. I was just very serious and just listening to her. Once I did that, she said, yeah, me and my husband, we went to the African American Museum. So she switched it up to try to make it seem like, you know, what I'm saying right now, I'm not racist. I mean, I went to the African American Museum. I was just saying this because of, you know, whatever reason. And I understood that what she was saying about those so-called Africans, she was also saying about me. So I don't have any reason to, it's not, there's nothing funny about it. Moving on to Mr. Muhammad, he said, I guess it was, no, I don't think it was yesterday, maybe the day before on Tuesday or something like that. He made a statement, I can't quote him directly, but he made a statement about white people can't help but be racist and something about a sickness with them. The interesting thing was there was not the same compassion for other victims. There was the total opposite of that. And I understand that white people are to blame for that. I'm only saying that to say, you know, when it comes to black people, I guess, not doing what we think they should do, we definitely need to employ. I know for a fact Mr. Williams employs this, but I want to say he got it from Mr. Fuller, which is, you know, how can we help that black person? And one of the ways we can help them is that we can do what you do a lot, what Nellie Fuller Jr. does a lot, whatever Williams does a lot, which is to have the same compassion for them that Mr. Muhammad spoke about with these race soldiers, because these race soldiers are not sick, they're just evil. Whereas with us, we have been victimized, and that's the reason why we do some of the things that we do. The one last thing that I wanted to say was that race soldier who told one of the victims on the line about high blood pressure and heart disease and all that was absolutely lying in terms of, you know, these are black issues. First of all, white people lead in heart disease deaths, 74,000 people to 500,000 people, meaning it's killing 74,000 of us a year and killing 500,000 of them, more than 500,000 of them a year. And that's heart disease. As far as blood pressure, it's killing 5,000 of us a year and 22,000 of them a year. And you have these very similar gaps in diabetes, obesity, and everything else. And I remember Dr. Mutegi, I'm going to end with this. I remember Dr. Mutegi, he pointed that out, and he said, if heart disease is affecting white people like this, why is it propagandized, for lack of words, as a black problem? And so that was it. I'll mute my line. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Gus.
Context of white supremacy. Words are very important. Ivy, I think others have pointed that out over the years. Circus, I would be very mindful anytime that whites, in any context really, are talking about an environment where non-white people are present as a circus, whether it's you or just other non-white people are present and it's being characterized as a circus. I would be a circus, a zoo, anything where you have animals, non-humans, I would be very mindful of that sort of talk. Anytime that they're talking bad about African, really any non-white people, period, they're talking about you. I think sometimes we get confused, all of us still learning, but absolutely, they are talking about, even if you don't, like, you know, in your face or say anything to respond, that's what you should be thinking in your mind. They're talking about me, all of us, because I think that happens a lot in workplace settings where they try to make those sorts of comments and get us to participate, to join in on the joke, so to speak. Let's see. The compassion with other victims in the workplace seems to be very difficult to muster. That racists are most to blame for that as well. But wow, if we could try to keep that in mind, and for some reason, like, oh, I could play lots of sound clips over the years. As I said, for a long period, we had a difficult time talking about what tacky and terroristic things race soldiers do to us in the workplace, because so much of the frustration and energy was focused on what other victims are doing and how they are responding to white supremacy, racism in the workplace. So that seems like just something we can all work to be mindful. Am I being compassionate with other victims, black people in a workplace setting? Am I being patient with them? Am I trying to help them solve problems? That's great suggestion. Instead of getting angry, instead of getting frustration, is there anything that I can do that would be of help And even being mindful with that. I know Mr. Williams talks about that too, being mindful and asking, do you need any assistance? Would you like any help with this specifically? It seems like this might be a problem. Would you like any help with that? And if they say no, okay, you change your mind, let me know. I will be happy to assist you as soon as I can. Courteous, patient with other victims, and remembering most importantly, what is this person in charge of again? When you feel like your patients might be, what is this person in charge of again? Context of white supremacy. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, if you have commentary to share on what we have discussed thus far, or if you have your own situation, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida. Already had a mention for the Florida courthouse today.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners, and callers. I want to start out my first one with there was one incident I heard that happened to a black female. I was conversing with a black female from the job, and we have our daily talks about workplace racism. And she said, I think it was either today or yesterday, where she was in trial. She was in court with a younger white female who I guess has been training to just go to court. And this is where a black female used to be. So there was a point where it was during court where she apparently gave the attorneys the incorrect hearing date for the next hearing date. So she was saying that I'm being reported to that the black female was embarrassed because the white female just, I guess, became panicked or had a panic attack, anxiety attack, and put her hands on her face. So she said the black female took her hands off of her face, like, hey, you got to get it together. Like, you made this mistake or whatever. So she had to correct it or whatever. So when they came downstairs and she reported it to the higher tier staff, the people that's called supervisors and directors or whatever, she reported what happened. And the white woman went in there, said that it didn't happen. She lied. Okay. She wasn't truthful. Okay. So that was very interesting. So I don't know exactly what the update of this is going to be, but I have to stay tuned on it. My next one is there was a customer that came in. It was a black male and what appears to be a child that was the product of a white and non-white, tragic arrangement. And it was a young boy. And he was carrying a doll, like you usually would see female children, little girls carry. And the white woman that sat in front of me was like, oh, you know, it's just good to see that, you know, a young child carrying this doll, baby doll. And we have so much toxic masculinity. And I've been meaning to report that one, but it had just resurfaced in my mind and I wanted to mention that. I don't know if anybody else been seeing this, like the dolls, the toy products that usually are sold to young girls, this young male child, non-white child, was holding and embracing the doll, the product. My next one is there was a white man that has been coming down to the break room. And it's two things I want to share with this one. The first one, he was talking about he runs like a Christian school or whatever, like for young people or whatever, youth school or something. And he was saying that he said, now let me show you how I trick some of these kids. And he said that in his class, he would say, well, you know, I need help doing something. And the kids would suspect that it would be some kind of grueling laborious work. So he on the first one, he got two sets of children to come help him, I guess, use a shovel to do some gardening or some kind of hard work or whatever. So after that first one, he asked it again the second time, a week later, and most of them didn't want to do it. So I guess like a few children volunteered, and then they went to go get ice cream. So he said he would do this to get, to build interest to get them to raise their hand again. And then it came back that third time, he got them to raise their hand. And he said, oh, well, you know, this is how I would do to trick them to come back and do some more work. Because after the second one, he got them to be interested in ice cream. So he used that to trick them to do work again. So these are like, he said, 7-8-year-olds he would do this to. That I thought that was just very, very interesting, very deceitful. So my next one was, he was talking about a way he would, well, he didn't use the term discipline, but he said that he would use the term focus exercise, where like if there was a misbehaving student or whatever, he would do stuff like make them sit on the ground until about like 15 minutes and they'd be at great discomfort and want to sit in their seat. He was like, oh, no, you can just sit back down. And he was being very like friendly or whatever, like with his tongue. Like that was his way of discipline. But focus exercises, hold their both of their arms out. And the kid was like, oh, no, you know, this is a piece of cake, metaphorically. This is easy. So it's like, oh, it's easy, you know, well, let about 15, 20 minutes go through with that. So you wouldn't like it then. My next one is, the sign-up sheet went out this week for the, I guess they did like a St. Patrick's Day luncheon or whatever. And they tried to send an email out to me. I didn't even respond to it because the whole office, none of them planned to do anything. So I think they might be trying to, lay low and just stay quiet and not do anything to participate because of what happened 2 months ago. So I think this is going to linger on for a little while because there may be some things about to come out in the office. But that's all that I pretty much have right now. And I may have a little later on. Thanks for allowing me to share.
The holidays, they said St. Patrick's Day. I don't know if I've ever had an issue with St. Patrick's Day, if my recollection is accurate. I think that is one that sometimes can result in violence because they'll say something like, if you don't have on a visible piece of green fabric, that you can be subjected to pinching. So sometimes that can be an excuse for violence in the workplace. But I'm not sure. I think that's another holiday that just becomes an excuse for binge drinking. Sobriety would be best, where it'll be, hey, we're going out to get green beers. You know, let's go out and get drinks. So alcohol and whites, talk about that. So it would be, I don't drink. You already have your excuses. I don't drink. And then look at policy and procedure about any of that pinching if they do any of that foolishness in the work. I can't imagine that. Bill Cosby and the Me Too movement, I can't imagine anybody engaging in pinching now. The panic attack episode, if I'm grasping that correctly, that this white woman did not have, I guess, her paperwork correct, the information correct for whatever needed to be filed. Court paperwork that we're talking about. She didn't have it correct. She went into a panic attack mode, had her hands up on her face. The black female was like, you know, hey, this is court. Let's get it together. You're an officer of the court, you know. This gets reported that this took place, that she kind of had, I guess, a moment of anxiety or whatever in the courtroom. And she says, oh, no. That didn't happen. That didn't go down at all. Is that correct? Reporting as though that the black female, was the black female the one who reported it? So she was saying that the black female said something that was not true about her having this panic attack in the courtroom?
Right. She came back down from the trial and reported it to the supervisor and the black male that I've been telling you about. That's the court director, the so-called, I guess, high-ranking position. After she reported it, they questioned the white woman about it, and she said that that didn't happen. So, right, that's accurate. That's exactly what happened. So I was like, I kind of just basically thought, I wonder what's going to be the conclusion for this, because it looks like that was a tactic to place the blame on the black female, basically to make it seem like she's basically being delusional and making a false report or something.
Exactly. Like that. That is serious. I mean, Justin Smollett and everything else that's happening, and just in a workplace context in general, I mean, that's like saying, oh, no, you know, this nigga woman here is just making up stuff. You know, she's coming down here and saying that I had an anxiety attack in the courtroom. She doesn't even know what she's talking about. She's coming down here lying like that's, and this is a court job. This is serious. Like, this is not, we're at McDonald's and she's saying that I ate five chicken McNuggets or something that I didn't eat. Like, this is serious. My understanding, a lot of times, courtrooms, they have cameras a lot of times. So this could be something that, hey, we could just go to the film and, you know, we'll end all of this. It won't be he said, she said, or she said, she said. So that too, you know, depending on how serious all of this is. But I mean, like, wow, that's pretty major. I mean, integrity is supposed to count for something in the workplace. If I was that black female, I don't know what the context was in terms of if she was asked about what happened, or if that was something that she, I don't know what her job title is, but if that was something that she had to report, because a lot of times, you know, court, this is serious and this is supposed to be public. So, I mean, that might be something that is supposed to be reported, that she made this error and then, you know, had a panic attack in the middle of the courtroom about the error. Maybe that's something that she's supposed to report. But if I'm being accused of lying about this, that she did do it, like, man, if I was that black female, if there was video, I would be requesting, like, hey, I do not want it to be said or even hinted that I am running around and casting false accusations on a white person. I probably wouldn't say the white person, but casting false accusations. If there is any sort of video to corroborate, let's get the truth of the matter. That's what the courthouse is supposed to be all about. Let's make sure that we have an accurate record of what happened, and let's get that as soon as possible. Because I would not want this lying, incompetent white woman who is probably practicing racism to just be able to, that's just going to be the final word on it, that nigga's lying and that's that. Let's move on with the next, what's next on the docket for the day? Like, come on. The sadist, I mean, when these folks at the courthouse here, my goodness, white people in general, really, but at the courthouse here, so you had the white woman, who was, she was running an experiment wearing the same clothes day after day in the workplace. Now you got this white fella. He's working with children, probably black children. So he's working with these children in South Florida. And he says, oh, yeah, we'll go out and dig and then I'll trick them. I'll come back the next time around. They're eight. And we'll go get ice cream. Then I'll come back the next time. We go back out and dig. That's so funny. These are children. Like, what a sadist. He's got these little and he's proud. That's the, it reminded me of what Mr. Abdul Rahim wrote in his book that we discussed, where there were so many instances where the race soldiers at the Secret Service protecting the president were proud of their racism. They bragged about being racist. They bragged about mistreating black people on the job. They took pride in that. That is at the core, that is the essence of racist man, racist woman, racist child, what it means to be white. That's the same sentiment, to have this white man sit there and brag about tricking children, probably tricking non-white children, unless I'm, you know, talking crazy, please let me know. But tricking children that one week they don't know if it's going to be ice cream. That's racism, right? To keep them fooled, keep them confused. You don't know what it's going to be. Ice cream? Are we going to dig in the sewage? You don't know. I'm in charge, the white man. And probably non-white children. Like, that is total sadism. That is classic illustration of racist man right there and bragging about it in the courthouse. Let's see. Or I guess, do you think these are probably mostly non-white children?
I'm thinking it's a high possibility. He, I'm not sure what area he may be driving from, but I think he sails toward the Jacksonville area. So it's, I'm thinking it's a decent, sizably large population of non-whites in the area, because he said it has something to do with like some kind of a Christian school. So, and when he was describing that, and for the other one, he was saying focus exercise. So he said, you know, I don't call it discipline. I just call it focus exercise.
Holding your arms out and such for that amount. I mean, sadism, that would be what it sounds like to me. Racist man, racist woman, and taking advantage of children, bragging about that sort of thing, being able to go in and manipulate probably non-white children, although Jacksonville is not South Florida. But yeah, keep us posted, I reckon, on the holiday and what happens with the white woman lying about having a panic attack, because I hope they have video of that incident. Let's see. I have the emails, and there are other people that dialed in, but I do want to make sure that I played the UPS segment, because that would have probably been, if Mr. Muhammad hadn't been on the program and we had a whole 2 hour plus program about workplace racism days before, this UPS segment would have been at the beginning of the program. But I already had something that I was going to play, and this just happened yesterday. This was just reported yesterday, so I'm making sure to include it. So as I stated, this is like 19, like this is not one, not two, 19 black employees at an Ohio UPS facility reported being subjected to white terrorism over a long period of time. They'll explain in the report. I think this is important, not just relating to what you heard with some of the folks who wrote in today, some of the comments that they shared, but anytime that we think about lynching, whites hanging nooses, pictures of nooses, anything related to that at all, we're talking about murder. We're talking about killing someone. These are threats of violence. That's the way that they need to be processed. That's what a lynching is. That's what the noose is. You're killing someone, probably castrating, but you're killing someone. These are threats of violence. How does that impact your psyche? Talking about having panic attacks in the workplace, how does that impact you emotionally going into a work environment where you're being subjected to threats of violence? Now, I don't think they process it. I don't think that's the way that what that term doesn't get used. I don't think in this clip we'll listen, but that is something to consider, because I think many black people, directly, indirectly, they go into work environments where they are literally being threatened with violence. And in this case, it's lethal violence. This is Ohio UPS workers. So they're talking to seven of them. This was just yesterday evening reported in Toledo, Ohio.
The racist environment. Plus, we're hearing from the NAACP. 19 workers at the UPS distribution center in Maumee claim racism and a hostile work environment. We're the only local TV station to speak with seven of the UPS workers there. WTOL 11's Emma Henderson has been on this since the beginning. Emma, why are they speaking out now?
Dan, all seven of the people I spoke to are still current employees at UPS. They've all been there for more than two decades. Some barely even knew each other before the lawsuit, but they're tied together by their experiences and the fact that they say they want to leave a positive work environment for the next generation of employees.
These are just seven of the 19 employees of the UPS distribution center in Maumee that say they've been working in a hostile and racist environment.
I feel like I have to look over my shoulders every single day because I don't have any protection.
It's uncomfortable to really work there now because I can't really have any faith or confidence in my coworkers, my managers, even in my union right now.
Paula Bennett has been part-time for 20 years. She applied for full-time jobs, but instead has shorter shifts.
2 hours a day.
For Pamela Camper, there's one experience she remembers vividly.
I've witnessed a female white employee, package car driver, that didn't want to deliver a package because she stated it was a bill.
According to the lawsuit, this woman was fired only to be rehired again to the same job.
Semi driver, upon arriving back at the UPS facility, called a security guard a and five or more of us filed a grievance on the driver.
According to the lawsuit, a driver was fired and then rehired after using similar language. Anthony Lino says he found two nooses hanging above his workspace and racist graffiti in the bathroom, but this is a job he needs.
Where am I going to go? You know, I got 10, 15 years in now. I got a family. I got, you know, house. I got bills. Where am I going to go?
Many of these employees realize they'll be retiring soon. So they say this lawsuit is about change for the next generation.
I would like to see them start to treat their black employees like human beings.
The lawsuit is currently in the Lucas County Court of Common Pleas. 19 people in total are named as plaintiffs against UPS. Reporting live in studio, Emma Henderson, WTOL 11.
Emma, thank you. Tonight, we're also hearing from UPS. The company saying in part, the behavior reported is abhorrent and in conflict with our values and culture at UPS. UPS promptly investigated and took swift disciplinary action against those found to have engaged in inappropriate actions, including the discharge of two employees.
Am I gonna go?
Many of these employees realize they'll be retiring soon, so they say this lawsuit is about change for the next generation.
I would like to see them start to treat their black employees like human beings.
The lawsuit is currently in the Lucas County Court of Common Pleas. 19 people in total are named as plaintiffs against UPS. Reporting live in studio, Emma Henderson, WTOL 11.
Emma, thank you. Tonight, we're also hearing from UPS. The company saying in part, the behavior reported is abhorrent and in conflict with our values and culture at UPS. UPS promptly investigated and took swift disciplinary action against those found to have engaged in inappropriate actions, including the discharge of two employees.
Discharge and rehiring of two white employees. Even some leaving out right there. Wait a minute. This is context of white supremacy. Gus T was a little lazy. If I had really been on my diligence, like I would have, there would have been quite a few rewinds and I would have put nigger back in the clip. I really think that that is inaccurate and possibly an act of white supremacy. Anytime that they bleep out, if he said nigger bitch, you put that back in. That's part of the, that's what James Lowen said. Historian, suspected race soldier, author of Sundown Towns Book Club. That's the language. That's what he said. That's a part of the violence of white supremacy. Let's not sanitize. If that's what he said, then put that back in the audio clip. If she said that white woman, I'm not delivering over there, that's in Niggerville, put that back in. I don't have an audio of somebody saying Niggerville, but put that back in. Don't sanitize. And I don't want to hear the N word either, but 20 years part-time. I had this, that would have been rewind number one. 20 years part-time. I don't know if there are younger people in the audience. Maybe you don't have a grasp of a work history of what your career trajectory should look like, what your ambitions are, but 20 years part-time, 2 hour shifts. Wow. That is a moment where I will pause. When we talk about working in an environment, what I just said, now what impact does that have where you're in an environment where you're being subjected to threats of lethal violence? What impact does that have on your black self-respect? What impact does that have on your spirit? What impact does that have on you physically? All the obesity epidemics. What impact, we talked about high blood pressure. Now, what impact does that have on your blood pressure coming into an environment where you're being subjected to threats of lethal violence and kept on part-time shift for 20 years? But when I talk about being in an environment workshop. We do the yoga retreat in California. That is one of the workshops. You get stuck in the mud when you find yourself in environments that are unhealthy, toxic. They're not productive for you at all. We're in a system of racism, white supremacy, so that's the entire planet. But I mean, wow, some environments are substantially worse than others. Sometimes it is best to relocate as best you can. It cannot be a city. I talk about that regularly within workplace racism, that we'll be in job situations that are far from what we would like. Racism is going to be at any job, but I mean, the situation that we're in is horrendous in every way possible. It's not even, quote unquote, safe, much less a place where we're advancing or making, you know, anything close to what we would like 20 years part time. This is the type of situation where it can't be a, I've been here for a year, or I intended to be here for a year or less, just to kind of figure things out and move on to the next better option for myself. And then 5 years have passed and it's, oh my God, or 10 years have, 20 years have passed. Like, that happens to so many victims of white supremacy. That is what this system does, where we just do not voluntarily relocate, not become dislocated, but voluntarily relocate to get out of a really dire situation that is killing us in slow increments. 20 years part-time. Grievance. I recommend not using the term grievance, that you are reporting misconduct. You are reporting subversive activity. Grievance, again, is kind of going towards that language of minimizing what we're talking about. These are threats of lethal violence. I said earlier, I think Ivy mentioned about being referenced as a circus, that we're animals, not people, where they said they just wanted to be recognized as human beings. Mm. The man, not even people. Anywho, the UPS situation, I'm hoping lots of people did see. Again, when I see something like that, I think, wow, they should have a program where black people talk about workplace racism. This seems to be, you know, a big problem. The number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Folks that we missed totally, if you have commentary to share, lines should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
I heard both of you. Let's see. We'll do Henry in Chicago first. Proceed, sir.
Okay. Greetings, Gus, and greetings to all the callers and listeners. I had an interesting workplace racism to share today. So I am in an environment where most people would quote-unquote call loose. And what I mean by that, it's basically all the employees there are friends with each other. Some of them are actually related, blood related. They worked in certain office politically, you know, in other spaces. So it's a very quote-unquote loose environment, as I said. Whenever I am in those environments, I even get more cautious. So today, one of my coworkers, was his last day. So they gave him, a nice little luncheon, and, he was, going to, and just for clarification, my coworker is a non-white, male. He is a product of a tragic relationship. He has a white mother and a black father. So today was his last day, and they gave him a luncheon. Several people from different departments came to the luncheon. Now, there is this one particular white male working in another department. Hello?
Oh. Sorry.
There's this one particular white male in another department who my coworker, you know, claims as a, you know, cool and a friend. All right. So as he was getting up because I guess they wanted, you know, they had different people in the department to speak on his behalf, you know, and how much they're going to miss him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what ends up happening is that the white male who works in another department, he's the head of another department, he surprises him by putting a pie in his face. And me and the person that I work under, who is a non-white black male, we kind of looked at each other like, what did we just witness? And I guess everybody was laughing. And we didn't understand what was going on. So apparently, it was supposed to be a joke. This guy does this to, like, you know, all of his, you know, exiting employees, and also, you know, for people's birthdays. Now, this guy runs a department where everybody in his department is non-white black people. And so, you know, I asked one of the coworkers or one of the workers in his department, like, does he always do this? And they said, yeah, he always does this. He does this for a joke. But it just didn't seem like the coworker who was leaving didn't see it as a joke. But, you know, like I said, he kind of considers him a friend. Now, if this is what, you know, being friends with white people is like, then you can have them. So that's basically one I wanted to share. I'll mute my line.
Wow. I don't think it's a coincidence. Much obliged, Henry in Chicago. Pam the Great. No surprise, in my view, that he would have staff that's mostly non-white people, and that would be the ritual to, quote-unquote, celebrate the sadism. There it is again, to celebrate, quote-unquote, a birthday or somebody retiring. Like, yes, let's assault them with a baked item. Yes. And that would, again, no celebrating holidays. That's why I say, if we were not in a system of racism, white supremacy, I wouldn't care. Have all the cupcakes and, well, you don't need all that sugar, but, you know, fine. Participate in all that nonsense. Who cares? In a system of racism, white supremacy, it's just going to be another. Because I just said, for St. Patrick's Day, it'll be pinching. For sometimes on your birthday, it'll be, well, we get to punch you as many times, you know, however old you are, we get to punch you because it's your birthday. He's retiring. Let's hit you in the face with a pie. Hit you in the face with a pie. And said that might be the birthday ritual too. So it's just always an excuse for violence against black. And have fun. It's supposed to be fun. This is a racist joke. Have a good time practicing terrorizing violence against black people. Other folks who dotted. I don't know what to do in that situation other than maybe saying make a request. You know, people bring their clothes to just make a request that maybe this is not the best thing to do, that this could cause problems. You know, you have some people who have clothing on that they might not want to have baked goods thrown in their face. Some people have contact lenses and what have you. I mean, lots of reasons that we could. It's kind of juvenile. Like, is there anything better that we could do that where we don't have to assault someone to recognize them leaving the company forever or being alive another year on a planet dominated by racism? Is this the best that we can do to celebrate these activities, these rituals? That could be a question. Jay in Missouri, I believe also we heard from you, sir. Did you have commentary?
I did. I have so much to share. Where to begin? You brought up the UPS lawsuit and the threats of violence. I have a particular case I've been dealing with at my workplace with that as well. Now, currently I'm in an academic environment. I'm employed. The term is actually used on the contract that I signed. It's called a work study. And so I'm like partial, I'm a student, but I'm also, you know, an employee at this establishment. And another white female who works with me, almost every day we're working together, she makes, and I've counted now, 3 to 5 physical, verbal threats against me. unsolicited. I will be sitting outside of the office. I will be sitting at a table. I don't know how much I should explain this. So we have an office, and then the office is connected to kind of like a welcome center. And so the welcome center has couches and tables for students to study and coffee and things like that. And so I will sit outside of the office, engaging in academics and studying. And while I'll be reading something, she will just walk past me and say, "Hey there, Jay, I'm going to beat you in the head with a stick." Or just, you know, or, "Hey there, Jay, I'm gonna kill you." And I'm just like, and I'll just look at her sometimes like, why? You know, I've done nothing to you. I mean, you know, and it's an everyday occurrence with that particular coworker. And then there's another one who, you know, for some reason, every time we speak, you know, this guy engages me, and I think he brings up the topic of race on purpose. Now, academically, I do, you know, read certain books. You know, I'll follow along with the Kyle's reading list. So, you know, I'm listening to the archives of Malcolm X's autobiography, and I thought it was worthy to note that the person in the audio clip that you just played said that they want to be treated like humans. You referenced Dr. Curry's work, but I think Minister Malcolm's autobiography is instructive there as well, because the part, I think I'm on chapter 13, those are the exact words he said, that the Negro in America wants to be treated like a human being. And so these things will come up, and this employee will engage with me. And somehow he just asserts his own conclusions about these kinds of things at his will. And so, you know, by the end of our conversation, he ends up saying things like, "Well, you know, the blacks, you guys are going to just have to be happy with what you get. And, you know, I think a lot of this comes down to jealousy. You guys are just jealous because you don't have what white people have." And, you know, I'm a lot of times I'm just left with nothing to say. I try to use the principle of silence. I try to be silent and just not engage. But it is amazing how much they will continue to speak and interrupt me. And that goes to my third point. Now, in this center I work in, it's frequently visited by people this society would refer to as veterans. Unfortunately, I myself fall within that category. So I am interacting with these veterans, and one of them, who purportedly has some kind of cognitive impairment, but is enrolled in a master's program at one of the top universities in this region. The amount of distraction, I can't overstate the distraction. While I'm trying to read, while I'm trying to write and complete assignments, I inform this individual what I am doing and that I need to focus on other things, and the amount of just incoherent babbling that takes place, it's unbelievable. And yeah, that's all I wanted to share for today. That's been my experience today. I literally had a headache and had to stop reading because people would just not stop talking. So thanks for letting me share.
Wow. That is weaponized use of sound. I mean, audio assault. We were just talking about that in the context of yoga, how sound can be used for healing. My sound bowl, or my singing bowl, was a big hit at the yoga retreat. Sound can also be used to destroy. I mean, my goodness, all of the nonsense that they have blasted on black people. They played Drake in yoga today. It can be weaponized. And I think whites that being in workspaces or just around whites with particularly, as you said, when you're trying to read, you're trying to do something that's constructive. You've made that explicit. I'm trying to get something. We're at work. You know, we're not at home watching Marvel's Black Panther. I'm trying to get work done. And they just come and are talking about nonsense. Chantel has talked about this repeatedly. We've had a number of Cal's listeners over the years who've talked about this. Where whites, it's not even hinting at trying to be constructive. Just talking about total practicing racism just to be disrupted. You have a headache. Mission accomplished. That's what we want. We're going to get on, literally, we're going to get on that nigga's nerves. We're just going to talk and talk and talk and ramble and interrupt him and anything that we can do so that he cannot have a moment's peace. Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, she talked about it. The center being placed near her residence where they had the daycare center and they were making all the noise. She talked about that, that audio assault where you can't even think peacefully just to process information. And that's done deliberately to black people on a regular basis. Those threats. That's another instance where I would straight face the same thing when the listener wrote in about the white male saying, oh, the Indian fella is gone. Now we can make racist jokes about him. Where I said, you know, oh, excuse me, Brett, can you say that one more time? I didn't hear that all the way. You said what now? Indian fella gone. We can make racist jokes. OK, gotcha. Thank you, sir. Same way that you can do the same thing with that. Oh, you said what now, Helen? You said, you're going to beat me in the head with a stick. Oh, okay. Boop, boop. Gotcha. Thank you, ma'am. You said what now? You're going to kill. Oh, okay. Write that down. March 15, 2019. Yes, ma'am. Got it. Okay. Or that might be one. Oh, you're going to beat me. Is this something that I need to see human resources about? And just wait for the response. Either way, we're staying in the question lane. Can you repeat? Do I need to see human resources about? Do I need to call 911? We are talking about assault here. Do I need to call 911? And that might even be one. I mean, I would take that serious. That should be a serious option in going to human resources or going to the most powerful white person possible. Is this a matter for the authorities? We've had a threat of lethal violence repeatedly. Is this a matter for the authorities? Because I think if a white woman, if it was the other way around, if you were saying that you were going to beat her brains in, you were going to kill her, if she wanted to call the police, I think she would be supported. That could be a question even to ask in human reason. In fact, that could be one just to ask in human resources. If an employee threatens violence against you, including lethal violence, is that a matter where you can just phone the authorities? You don't feel safe? Phone the authorities. What is the proper response if you've been threatened with lethal violence? From a coworker, from an employee, what's the response? What's the protocol? And see what they say. But I would have lots of questions. I would take that extremely seriously. Same thing with the UPS situation. White people threatening lethal violence, period. But I mean lethal violence against black people in a workplace. Immediately, I would take that. I would take them at their word that they're serious. This is something that they're thinking about and seeming that they're having fun. This is humorous because that's what she'll say. Oh, I was just joking. I was just kidding around. You know, we just have a little fun. And the other, this is supposed to be humorous, acceptable, and fun, joking about killing black people in the workplace. Other folks that we missed totally, if you have a hand up, if you have suggestions on what's been discussed thus far, or if you have your own situation, if you have a hand up and we missed you totally, line should be open. Proceed.
Muted.
I did hear someone, yes.
A little echo going on. Is that better?
Let's just say something again. Not hearing you at all now.
Can I be
not
hearing
you? Oh, we can hear you now.
Hi. This is Jessamine. I wanted to basically report that I've been experiencing.
Hello?
Hello, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am. Sorry about that.
Okay. Oh, that's okay. My situation is a little different because I work with all non-white black people. And that can, you know, I understand with the whole compassion thing, but that can be a challenge, especially when, I understand that we're victims of white supremacy, and, a lot of our behaviors are learned behaviors that we've gotten from, the racists, because we do have been exposed and have been exploited and have been conditioned to think and act the way that we act. But it's not to say that that is not a challenge when you are constantly when you have to constantly deal with certain behaviors, even when it's coming from us. And I wouldn't really care who it was coming from, but it's still a challenge. So, you do still try to have that compassion. And because I am learning to be less anti-black, and I honestly have to attribute that to the cows, because although I might have thought that I was conscious to a degree, and I grew up in knowing about our history and things like that, it still didn't cause me to not be any less anti-black, because I really was, and I still struggle with that on a daily basis. So I'm learning as a result from listening to the show how to have a little bit more compassion and not be so, wanting to be at, each other's throats, non-black people's throats, and trying to react and acting in very anti-black ways that I used to react. But it's still a challenge when you have to deal with, non-black, non-white black people that work with you, and they're doing things on purpose, and it's it's almost a mimic of what the racists did do. So what I'm dealing with is these this individual or these individuals, they constantly talk and gossip. It's all the time. It's this backbiting, gossiping about one or the other coworker, and it's I tell them, and I try to kind of keep my distance, try to only engage when I have to, when I'm dealing with work. I try not to deal with people outside of work. I don't do any of that. I have limited my conversation as far as things that's not work related, but still it's you can tell it's being done on purpose, because they know, it's aggravating to me, and because that's something that I don't like to engage in, because I have, I've learned from my mistakes from, earlier on. I had reacted to certain things in a way that that I could have reacted in, I could have responded in a better manner. So I've learned from that experience. So I've just learned how to conduct myself in a better way now. But it's the gentleman was saying, you're reading or you're doing something, and they'll do, it's like they're coming to you with this gossip and talking about people. They want you, it's almost an entrapment type of deal. They want you to say something negative about these other individuals, so they can run, because you already know they're going to run back and tell this other person. And, I have been very good with not reacting to it. I have responded in a very, I think I've responded pretty well in those situations. But I need to say, it's still aggravating. I had to tell this one of the guys, I need to know, what should I say to this individual? What should I say to these individuals when they keep coming to me, trying to get me involved in somebody else's drama? I know that they're doing this on purpose because they want me to say something so they can, get me, so it can be a thing where it's a he said, she said deal, so it can be drama. But I'm trying to keep myself out of it. So, like, I don't want to, like, what I've been doing is that I don't want to have to keep explaining myself that, no, I don't want to, I don't have nothing to say about this person, or boom, 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 like, but I'll just be quiet, and I won't say anything at all, like, and I'll just let them ramble on, and then I'll just remove myself as soon as possible. So these are the type of things that I'm engaged in, I'm dealing with on the job, and just them, like, this individual bringing individuals from outside of the work or people that work there to try to, you know, get them around you so they can basically have something to say about you, or, you know, trying to bring, like, outside people from that you may know into the workplace to try to cause some type of, like, drama or whatever. So I don't know, like, that's, it's not, you know, I've been handling it pretty well, but it's still like, it's a challenge to have to deal with that on a daily basis every day when you're coming to work and you're having to deal with, you know, such anti-blackness on the workplace. And if anybody has any suggestions on what else I can say or do in situations like that, when you're being, you know, forced to have to listen to somebody gossiping or bad mouthing another person and that person is not around, you know, how would they respond to that situation? And that's all I have. Thank you.
Much obliged, Traptomania. No one is more aggravating than whites. That being said, victims, including Gus T, can be very frustrating for a variety of reasons. People who are not able to solve problems, all victims of white supremacy qualify as people who are not able to solve problems, just following logic, unless I'm in error. It can be very frustrating to be around. You know, that is frustrating. But it sounds like you're already doing outstanding counter-racist work, because that's what I would be doing, is not saying anything at all. And then I would state, probably not a bunch of times, but I would make it explicit that I am not participating in any gossip. Like, I'm here to whatever it is. Let's do our job and make as much money as we can in the meantime. Be courteous to each other, but I'm not interested in participating in any gossip. And the same thing that's been said before, how can we help this person? That might be when they get done. So how can we help such and such? And see if that gives, you know, that might change things significantly, particularly if they see that that's the pattern, that anytime they come, man, did you see she came in at such and such and he had on this and he said that and so, oh, okay. So how can we help Ted? How can we help Martha? How can we help Ronald? That might be the way to go with that one, to just every time it ends with, how can we help this person? And either they will have nothing to say, or we will figure out something constructive to do with, hey, that is awesome. So now we have shifted to helping a black person on the job. Phenomenal. Black self-respect all the way around. You take that one from, I think, Mr. Williams. I think that's who I heard it from, Mr. Edward Williams, founder, counter-racism.com.
Thank you so much, Gus.
Yes, ma'am. Other folks that we missed, totally, the number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, so this is the caller from 712. I hope everybody's having the best night that they can have. And I'm just calling to give everybody an update on the supervisor position that I was offered. And I didn't take that position, and I'm so glad I didn't. They hired a bunch of folks, and one of the people was a white person that was just telling us how glorious it was back in the Civil War times. And he does reenactments, and he goes around to the history schools and teaches the children, and he wish it was back in that time. So I am so glad I didn't take that position.
I couldn't take it anyway because I'm studying information technologies, administration, security, and networking. So that really is taking up most of my time, and I had to go part-time there, and I'm really looking for a job that can give me hands-on training while I get paid to better excel at these classes, because these classes have got really difficult, and it's just the second semester. But I just wanted everybody to know, I know y'all wanted me to give y'all an update that I didn't take that job, and hopefully in the future I'll get a supervisor's position offered to me, and I'll be able to experience that just for the training. But, yep, and that's what I got going on. And then for the lady that called in with the gossiping co-workers, it is real difficult working around a bunch of Black people that, and it's not really only Black people. A lot of people do this, but I would just say with the gossiping, stay away from it, like it seems like you have been, just letting them know you're not really into it. And it didn't sound like you're one person to go back and to gossip the gossip that somebody told you. And I can remember Dr. Wilson saying that on one of Gus's programs, when people bring you gossip, just dead it right there. They can tell you it, but you don't have to continue to spread the gossip. So that's one way to deal with it as well. And then thank you so much for listening to me. Everybody have a good night.
For sure. Thank you kindly for giving us the update. I'm not sure if someone classified as white engaging in Civil War reenactments would be enough for me to turn down a promotion, because I would suspect I might have to have contact with this person anyway, even if I don't take the promotion. So, but yes, if you are getting better education and don't have the time and energy, then you made the best decision and you're in the prime position to know. So, hey, bravo on the decision, and I hope you are able to get some OJT experience that is beneficial for your classes as well. I think whites are really resourceful at getting those type of networking opportunities, skill building opportunities, really. Let's see, other folks that we missed totally. If you have comments on your own situation, or if you want to share on comments that have been made thus far, line should be open. Proceed.
Hey, Gus, may I be heard?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, we can hear you.
I'm calling to give you an update. I sent you an email earlier today about the fifth grader kid that cursed me up and was giving me a hard time. So anyhow, I...
Oh, no, we haven't read that email yet. Do you want me to read the email and then you can give us the update? Because I haven't even read all the emails yet. So you could either tell us...
Okay, yeah.
Or I can read the email.
Yeah, you could go ahead and read it.
Okay.
You could read the email and then I'll call you back on it.
Well, I'll read it and then you can just pick up as I finish. So let me pull my email. I told you a lot of people wrote in today. They said that in Virginia that you have a lot of people, or some people that are, you know, concerned about sharing. So, oh my God, it's lots of them. Gee whiz. okay, here we go. Just wanted to drop you a note to tell you thanks for everything you do. Victims of racism owe a lot to your program, Mr. Fuller, and honestly, I believe it's because... Yes, yes, yes. Okay. He lives in California. That's great. That's awesome. Awesome, awesome. Yoga retreat, Lake Arrowhead. All right. Caller the other day who works for the school district, and they lied on me, stating that I was bringing guns and drugs on the school property, and my white race soldier supervisor had all the non-white Latinos carry out the lies against me. Anyhow, last Friday, this fifth grader got on my bus and proceeded to call me a nigger bitch, and oh, that's what I said about not sanitizing, and nigger. This student is non-white Latino, and I am black. I asked him, what is the definition of a nigger? And he point blankly said, you, meaning me. He became very disruptive on the bus, and when I pulled the bus over to tell him to behave himself, he yelled out, you hit me, by... I'm sorry for laughing, sir. This is terrorism. It's terrorism against you. I'm sorry for laughing. But as a fifth grader, I mean, we're talking about somebody that's 10, right? That's what we're saying?
Yeah, yes, Gus.
Okay. So we got this 10-year-old non-white. I don't use that term Latino, but not. So we think this is someone who is not classified as white. How many times has this come up on workplace racism? I'm not even saying, you know, this program specifically, but just workplace racism, that we've talked about this one little bit of racist code by Felicia, that a 10-year-old already has this, perhaps a racially ambiguous 10-year-old, but he knows enough of the racist coding that, by Felicia, that's you, nigger. Anyway, you hit me, by Felicia, I'm going to get your bitch ass nigger fired. Fearing that this kid would cause me grief, I told my female supervisor, white race soldier supervisor, about the incident, and I also documented it for my own record. Is there a camera on the vehicle, sir? I know they have cameras on a lot of these buses now. Is there a camera on the vehicle?
Yes, Gus, they have a camera, and I told them about it, and they looked at the camera, and they didn't see me do anything wrong, you know, but the point is that it was stressful for me. My whole weekend was stressful, you know, because they take the word of the kid more than they take your word, you know?
Wow. So they pointed out everything that I could do better on the bus, but nothing in regards to the incident. This type of treatment is very unacceptable, but by staying on code and hearing your voice in my head, stating to control our emotions is very comforting. So what did they say that you could do better? What did they say specifically that you should have done that you did not do, or vice versa, that you should not have done this, that you did do it, but you shouldn't have done it?
Well, the first thing they did was they looked through the whole tape, and they looked at other incidents that happened on the tape. And then they said, well, you could have stopped this incident, and you should have paid more attention to this kid. But I couldn't do it because I'm driving, so I can't. I have to keep my eyes on the road, you know. So I tell them, look, I can't see all these kids at the same time. I got to pay attention on the road, and I can't crash this bus because then you guys are going to charge me with manslaughter for all these kids, you know. So they told me that, they never made any mention about this kid, you know, not try to suspend him or anything. No mention was made of all the comments, the derogatory comments he made towards me, but they pointed out, well, you could have ignored the kid. He's just a kid, and you should have just ignored him and then report to us. I said, but you saw the whole thing on tape, so what you want me to do about it? What are you guys going to do about it to protect me? So they didn't mention anything about, you know, protecting me or suspending this kid. Now, the update on that today was I picked up the kid again today. So this time he took a picture. He had a phone. And he took a phone and he punched in a gorilla. And he said, hey, bus driver, you kind of look like this gorilla. You know, so I tell him, look, I'm not going to debate you in any argument. Just sit down. Put on your seatbelt and let me get you where I'm going. But he kept harping on and harping on, and then he had all the other kids joining him in berating him, you know. So I'll have to address this with upper management sometime this week because I can't deal with this type of stress and this antagonistic racist behavior, you know.
Wow. I'm so sorry that you had to endure that repeatedly. I would not say I would treat him the same way that I would any other race soldier. I would have very little to say. It would be minimal, words. That was, I think, when we had Mr. Muhammad Abdul Rahim on the program. He said he had a word diet with the racists on his job. I would be on a word diet with this child. So a suspected race soldier. We don't know. There would be, and he's at minimum anti-black. So there would be as little to say as possible. There would not be any arguments. I would even tell him that I'm not getting into any arguments or anything. If he goes into, you know, gorilla this and gorilla that, I wouldn't even say anything. If anything, I would consider if you have audio recording it so that you have exact evidence of what he's saying to present to the folks that are in charge. What is the proper procedure if he is engaged in this sort of conduct? I would even look at the policy and procedure. If you have children that are engaged in threatening, terroristic, racist behavior, what is the procedure? At what point does this become a safety issue? Do the other children, do they have to listen to this on the ride to school? I don't know if they have other non-white children. And that can't be the way that you start your academic day, to have to listen to this on the ride to school. Is it? I put that in the form of a question,
too. They have one other black child that rides my bus, and he came up to me, but he rides my bus in the evening time. And he came up to me and told me, he said, "Hey, well, one of the kids back there called me Planet of the Apes." So I had to go address that issue with that one kid, you know, because he told me the kid was racially bullying him too. So now I got, you know, you just reminded me that I have two issues I gotta bring to upper management. And then another thing too, the race soldier was trying to be slick and trying to forward the whole incident to HR to try to mislead HR to believe that I was a problem and not this troubled kid, you know what I'm saying? So that's what I'm dealing with right now, you know. And it's kind of very stressful.
I would imagine so. I mean, I view that as terrorism. Same thing the UPS workers talked about, same thing we talk about on a weekly basis. You know, I would seriously consider just having audio recording of what's being said. If he's engaging in that behavior, I would maybe encourage the other black student or students to sit near you so that you can kind of hear if they're being subjected to this abuse as well. And I would really emphasize that this is not, you know, just me and, you know, oh, my feelings are hurt because this little 10-year-old, you know, said something that made me sad. Like, well, no, he's making terroristic threats. And there are other black children on the bus. Do they have to be subjected to hearing this and being threatened themselves on the way to school? And ask them that in a very direct manner. If the answer is no, well, then what should be done to solve this problem permanently? And get that answer quickly and written down.
And then the last thing he told me before he got off the bus today, he said, because I have a broom that I sweep the bus with, and the end of the broom is the bristle on the broom is black. So, you know, my head is bald. So the last thing before he got off the bus, he told me, "Hey, you could use some of that bristle on your head to replace your hair." And then he got off the bus. So, man, this guy don't stop, you know.
I mean, that's, you know, to be expected. And again, I wouldn't respond to any of that. That's why I say.
I don't, you know, I just keep quiet, you know.
Yeah, it's just that's what dogs bark, birds chirp. Whites practice racism, white supremacy. Now, he may be a non-white person who is aspiring to be accepted as white. At minimum, he is anti-black. Whatever the case may be, my code would look very similar to the way that I would engage with a race soldier. It would look identical at this point. So I would expect all of that. And yeah, at this point, it would just be about recording and or documenting, protecting the other victims, children that are on the bus, non-white children I'm talking about. Well, you know, the children, period, but non-white children especially, protecting them and really emphasizing their safety. This is a safety issue, a safety hazard for these children, yourself included. And how do we solve this safety hazard promptly? That would be
the question that I'd proposed to folks in management, and being, you know, aware of their racism, as you stated, trying to blame you for this. That's why I said having documentation. They have the video recordings for all of these incidents. That's why I said documented recording, especially if they're making Planet of the Apes, anything like that, to you, the other children on the bus, getting all that recorded and or documented so that you can, you know, have as much evidence in your favor as possible in dealing with this. But yeah, I cannot emphasize that enough. That's, you know, my apologies for laughing. I do kind of have a warped sense of humor, so I do tend to laugh at a lot of racist things, you know, that has happened many times throughout my history as a Cal's host. But by Felicia, there could be an impressive array of sound clips just around different ways that listeners have shared in a variety of different settings where whites, racially ambiguous people, have used this line to practice racism against them. It is, I mean, white people are not ignorant about Friday, Ice Cube movies, or racism.
Yeah. Gus, well, thanks a lot for everything, and I appreciate it. Thanks.
Lake Arrowhead, California, July 3rd, July 7th. Cal's Yoga Retreat might be there. We shall.
Okay, Gus, hope to see you.
For sure, for sure. Other folks that we have missed totally, if you have a hand up, if you have commentary to share, if you have suggestions for any of the callers that have spoken thus far, or if you have your own situation, proceed.
Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, Codified Software Developer.
Is that me or is that you?
Neither.
Echoing. Oh, okay. All right. Right on. Good evening, Gus. Good evening to all the callers and listeners on the line. Just a couple of observations I've made over the past couple of weeks. One, white people don't seem to have a problem refining their racist code and can refine it very quickly. I was in a meeting and one of the white people used that terminology, we're all family here. And I said, well, we're actually not family, we're coworkers, you know, and left it at that. The next day, I had to be out because my son was sick, and all of a sudden, I get all these emails from all these white people giving me well wishes about my son and how they hoped that he would feel better. And just that quickly, they could refine their racism. Well, we're such a family. And I thought to myself, wow, I need to, you know, I was very impressed with that, and I said, wow, I need to be able to refine my counter-racism as quickly as they can refine their racism. So that is the goal for 2019, to refine my counter-racist code very quickly, on the spot, ad hoc. In terms of the Black intern, I think I've called in about her several times. She was working in business intelligence, and then they were sort of giving her the runaround, I guess we can say that today because it's not Saturday, giving her the runaround about giving her a position. Yesterday, well, I found out that we were getting a new white male on the team that I work on, I guess not we, but there's going to be a new white male assigned to the team that I work on. And this white male applied for an architecture position and was denied, but was given the position one job title lower. And so I asked the Indian male on the team that I work on, I asked him, I said, well, where will he be sitting? And he said, oh, he'll be sitting in the Black intern's old cubicle. And I said, well, what happened to the Black intern? And the Indian, my Indian coworker says, well, you know, she, I guess she was, you know, she would have been able to stay if she wanted to, I guess she didn't want to stay. And I said, well, who told you that? Because I was under the impression that she was applying for a BA position, and I heard from somebody else a black female, one of the black females that works in CSC. I didn't tell him this part, but I heard, or in the call center, I heard another black female say that they rescinded that position. So they weren't even looking for anybody for that position. He said, well, I don't know. I mean, I just, that was something I guessed. And I just thought about how we like to, you know, how non-white people, we as non-white people like to make up stories to make ourselves feel better, because he had no knowledge about, you know, what was going on with this black female at all. But he had made up the story that she had left on her own volition, which I find very hard to believe, because she was very excited about trying to work at the company that I work at. Last but not least, I got a sizable bonus at the job that I work at. I'm still trying to figure out why. I know that white people do not like to give black people anything. So if they're giving me this sizable bonus, I'm pretty sure there's an ulterior motive behind it, but I have no idea what it is. And also for the Civil War reenactment, I work with people who also, white people who also do the Civil War reenactment. Excuse me. And you know, they're in pretty powerful positions, and you know, white people are going to practice racism wherever you go. Give what you can out of as many of them as you can, regardless of whatever they're doing. And that's all I have. I'll mute my line. Thanks so much.
Speaking logic, codified software developer in Wisconsin, the home of the legend Jeffrey Dahmer. On the compensatory call-in tomorrow, I would have said, oh yeah, run around. That is a metaphor. And I would have said it because I do think that's sort of, it's important to be specific about that, because that's a major way that white people practice racism, white supremacy, in lying to non-white people. Like, oh yeah, we got a position for you. It's going to be rescinded next week. Oh yeah, we got a position for you. Just make sure you apply. It's going to be rescinded. You sure? Oh yeah. Yeah, just apply. We got you. No problem. You've been great. It's been awesome having you here, and we'll look for it. You sure the position is going to be rescinded? No? Oh, yeah. Just apply. We got you. They do that all the time. Spectacular. Build up your hopes to get you excited and then dash to bits. Oh, yeah. Looks like it's not going to happen. Sorry about that. Sure it'll work out for you. They are spectacular at that. And absolutely, I think that is logic. Get as much as you can in the system of racism, white supremacy, maintaining black self-respect all the way, and remaining alert that they are going to be looking to abuse, mistreat you, and maybe try to take back all that they have given in the process. So being very alert for that along the way. But yeah, try to take as much as you can. The racism, white supremacy is going to be there, whether you are the janitor or the CEO. With the bonus.
Gus.
Yes,
I'm
yes,
sorry.
Ma'am.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Gus. One more thing. So that position was rescinded, but then today they announced that a very racially ambiguous male, I don't know if he's white or non-white, received the position. So I forgot to put that on. Sorry. Thanks.
All the way through. You got to have the finale. It's not the compensatory call-in, so we got to put the icing on the cake. We lied to her. Position's been rescinded. Sorry. And then we wait a week. Oh, and then now we put it back in. Oh, we got somebody. We're not going to give it to the Negro. Whoopee, look at that. We got the perfect candidate. How about that? We just, you know, had a budgeting problem, had a little money open up. Now we got the position back. What a shame. If it had just been a few weeks, a few days, and man, she could have got right. Oh, well, anyway, moving forward. So this is, and it's moved right along. Not coincidence. It is not happenstance. That is racism, white supremacy, white people. The great state of Wisconsin. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, if you have your own situation that you would like to share, or if you have commentary on what's been discussed thus far, proceed.
I have a question, Gus.
Yes, sir.
When I initially started the position in the educational center I'm at, an employee, first day on the job, keep in mind, we're in, you know, the St. Louis, and the year was, I believe, 2016, 2017. So this is directly after, Michael Brown is murdered. And the first day on the job, he starts talking about how Michael Brown deserved to die. And so this particular guy, he keeps inviting me over his house to use illegal drugs with him. Wow. I don't know how he has come under the assumption that I am a user of illicit drugs, but he keeps inviting me. And I keep just saying, oh, yeah, I'll call you. But he's starting to pressure a little more. Do you think I should keep up with that strategy of just kind of giving him the giving him the false start, or just say no?
No, I think that should be you put the kibosh on that like immediately. And I think in the workplace context, for anybody, white person, non-white person, sobriety would be best, so that I am never again. And hopefully, this is one that travels. They'll gossip about it. That it travels, that I do not participate in any activities involving intoxicants, getting drunk, or anything else, that you think I do not participate in any of that. And that would be connected to, I've had people in my family who've had substance abuse issues. Have you seen all of this with the opioid epidemic? My goodness, I had friends in college who went through all of that, and it just has totally, I mean, you can make up anything that you want, but the end of all of that is, I am sober and do not participate in any activities that involve getting intoxicated. So, and make that something that you are proud about it again, so that they host. And that would be from time one. I would never even give the impression that that's something that I'm interested in or whatever. You can still employ that strategy. You can just let them know that, you know, it's something that I don't, you know, really brag about or what have you, because I know people like to get together and hang out. But hey, I'm sober. I'm kind of a square man. I'm just nodding to that and leave it at that. Move forward. You want to add whatever to it. Like, I've had friends with the substance abuse. You don't have to say that if you don't want to, you know, because they might ask questions and be nosy about it, practice racism. But the end of it would be, I'm a square. I do not participate in any of that, so that and have a reputation for that and be proud of it, so that, you know, this doesn't come up ever again for any other employee. That would be my strategy, unless some folks see something that is not logical about that, or if you have a better approach to that sort of situation, and particularly going to their house, like, oh my Lord, like, woof, my goodness, come on. Any other folks have a different way that you would go about that? You've been invited to a race soldier's house for illegal substance abuse? Might be information for the authorities, I would think. My goodness.
That's true, Gus. I would just stick with, you know, I'm sober and I don't participate in such. I know people respond good to that. They really don't, because they think, just like you said, they think, well, dang, they might be the person to call the police on us anyway while they're talking about they're sober. But that's how I would deal with it. I'm in my mind.
I would just say no. That would just be it. I wouldn't give any explanation, nothing. Just no. That would be it.
Any much obliged. Any other suggestions? Yeah, I would not. This is one I wouldn't ferry out, because it seems like he's just going to continue to nag and invite and nag. So I would, you know, cut that at the knees, as Walter Beach III says, you know, the very next time that he brings it up. Hey, yeah, you know, I have to go ahead and lay down my cards. I'm kind of a square. I'm big time into being sober. I don't participate in any of that. So not going to be able to come hang out, man. Sorry. And hopefully that'll be the last of it. Other folks have commentary they would like to share. I think if we did not get you, we have less than 30 minutes in the broadcast. So You should get a hand up if you have commentary that you think you want to share or a question you think you want to add. 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I didn't even get all of the emails still. Continuing. Kizzy's cousin emailed in. The plantation continues to be a terroristic experience. I've had to pay attention to my well-being this week. That is spectacular. Don't hear that enough from Black people in the workplace. As the accumulative effect of the various terroristic acts have been wearing, the racists continue with their regular antics, arranging meetings that I should be at on days where they think I am not going to be in the office, not including me in emails about meetings I am supposed to be attending, corresponding with organizations I manage behind my back, my manager letting me know that she has decided the agenda for a project I am leading with someone else in the team and that they will meet with me to go through it, etc. Last week, Ivy, on the phone with us, talked about her volunteering activity and expressed some doubt about its relevance to the broadcast. I see it as applicable for a couple reasons. One, even though it is unpaid, many Black people are forced, due to racism, to take up volunteering opportunities to gain skills in order to find paid work. I think we just heard about an intern who was a victim of racism. Number two, as Ivy evidenced, racism is very much present. I applied for a volunteering role because I was being restricted on my job and I was keen to gain recent senior level experience, boost my CV, and get potential referees outside my main employment. I found the opportunity on an online volunteering platform. I did not know the organization or the people who ran it. I was very specific about what I could offer, which was broader than the role they were advertising, but still of value to them. I had an interview which went well, and I was verbally offered the position. I was also invited to a team away day. I later received an email from someone else on the board setting out the agenda for the event. She also informed me that a decision on whether or not I would be offered a position on the board would be made afterwards. I was very confused. Essentially, they had introduced another layer to the recruitment process, plus they wanted me to spend a day effectively giving them free consultancy, after which they would decide if I was fit to be on their board. I wrote to the chair and director who had interviewed me asking for clarification on their recruitment process and the previous discussion confirming my board placement. Clearly, they were not expecting me to challenge them, so they claimed the other board member had made an error and that my position was agreed. This left a sour taste in my mouth, but I took the position because my objectives were greater than their trifling, there's that word again, racist antics. I attended a couple board meetings, which were okay, and they were pleasant enough. However, there was clearly an underlying level of racism, which, if I were more confused, I would have missed. The chair, a suspected racist female, found it difficult to hide her disdain. The director, a suspected racist male, let me know one day that I came up in a discussion he was having with another suspected racist who works in the same field as us. I knew this person through my paid employment, but there was no honest reason for my name to come up in conversation. At that time, I didn't think anything of it. But after a couple of days, I realized they had been Voltroning. Who says that? And he was carrying out an investigation on me, an act of racism. They did not ask for references. If they had, I would have provided names. I had had enough at that point. I missed a few meetings because I had no wish to be around them. I was also thinking through whether or not I should resign. I did in the end, as I was putting up with enough racism through my paid employment, there was no way I was going to do so voluntarily. They subsequently used my association with their organization to get into meetings with senior managers where I work. I had not told my employers about my involvement with this organization. There was no reason to. However, I know they mentioned me because other race soldiers I work with have dropped the name of the organization in conversation, waiting for me to comment. Wow, race soldiers are so tricky. Cunning. I was not asked a direct question, so I made no comment. Brilliant counter-racist strategy. They were clearly wanting to let me know they knew about my association with the organization, racist surveillance and terrorism. I would still encourage people to volunteer. Just be strategic. Don't put up with racism and be very focused on what you get out of any situation. Right on. Much obliged, Kizzy's cousin. I still don't think I got through all the workplace racism emails. Other folks who dialed in, if you have comments, suggestions, I think we got everybody. But if you dialed in, if you have commentary you would like to share, proceed.
Abby Harris.
Greetings, Ivy.
About the clip you played with you with the UPS, they started with the racism immediately, saying that the victims claimed racism. When you use the term claim, that automatically means that it's false. That's what people are trying to say, especially race soldiers, when they say that. Report is the more accurate term, as you all always point out. It could also be a false report as well, but it's not automatically false when you use that term. They also just found a way, as they always do, to say that the victims are doing something incorrect. And what they said was, why are they reporting this now? Like saying that, you know, there's something incorrect about the timing, that maybe they're lying, or, you know, look at how long they waited, or whatever the case may be. And they called these racist actions inappropriate behavior rather than racist actions. And then bleeping out nigger and all these other words, that's just to, you know, do what they do, which is to protect whites, because there's clarity around that word. There's clarity around name calling. But a lot of racism is very indirect, because then people are not as upset and they're not as pressed to do something about racism when they're more confused about what's actually going on, when they think terrorism is discrimination, or, you know, these ridiculous terms, these deceptive terms that whites use. I want to say to Jay and St. Louis that maybe he could use headphones when the race soldiers come to him to disturb him while he's trying to study, which I think they're probably doing that on purpose so that he can't concentrate. Maybe he can just use headphones so that he can ignore them. And as has been suggested on this program so many times, he doesn't even have to be listening to anything, but just put them on. It's just a way to ignore them. It was about the drugs thing and offering him drugs. That could be and might be a setup. And so, you know, of course, just rejecting the person, saying no, and, you know, that's, I think, great advice that's been given out tonight. And even what you said about the gossip, Gus, when you mentioned about, you know, just asking how we can help these people. And also, like, when black people do and non-white people do incorrect things, for the most part, I get frustrated with white people. I don't get, for the most part, frustrated with them, because I know why they're doing the things that they're doing. I know that they have been conditioned to do the things that they're doing. I know that they have been victimized into doing the things that they're doing. Mr. Muhammad made a statement about, you know, I can't believe that they're so fearful and things like that. It's like, when I look at what whites have done and what they continue to do, I say to myself, yeah, that's why black people respond the way that they respond. That's why they be like, yeah, ain't no racism, and all the different things that we do because of the things that we've been through. So when I see, black people doing things that they shouldn't do, I get frustrated with the people who have conditioned them to behave that way, who have threatened them to behave that way, and all these other things that they've done. I want to say to the caller in Florida who spoke tonight, I've learned so much from you. Like, I appreciated his recent commentary on a few other broadcasts before this one, Workplace Racism. It was either the last one or the one before it, where he had compensatory language, and one of them was unjust networking, where he was just talking about how the whites on his job, that they network in an unjust manner to put black people and other non-white people at disadvantages. That's just incredible. And I have a laundry list of the things that I've learned from you over the years. So I really appreciate your commentary. Last two things I'll say, thank you to the person who wrote in about my volunteering. I'm very encouraged by that person's commentary that my volunteering is that it's relevant to this program. And I hope that everyone just has the best weekend that they can have. And I'll mute my line. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Gus.
Much obliged, Ivy. We have about 10 minutes left in the broadcast. So if you have a question, suggestion, scenario you would like to share, a view, something that you heard that you want to comment on, we have about 10 minutes left in the program. I did think that was really important in terms of, I think Mr. Muhammad said that he was surprised at how afraid black people were in the workplace. And yeah, I mean, I think Dr. Welsing used to emphasize that's why we use the word terrorism. That is the intended result of terrorism, to have black people be fearful. Is anybody here not, you know, experienced some level of fear in the workplace? Or if you're retired, anyone can truthfully say, oh no, I've never experienced any fear of whites in the workplace at any time in my life. Never. Anybody can truthfully say that?
Can I be heard, Gus?
Yes, ma'am.
Gus, this kind of puts me in mind of I am listening to the archives, the Wants of Other Sons, and throughout that broadcast of listening to that the audio book, you constantly kept reiterating the terrorism that we have gone through and that they had experienced, and how is it that we couldn't, that we don't act the way that we act. I mean, we've been conditioned throughout all these years, all that terrorism that all those people had to go through and that we're still encountering. That is the reason why we don't stand up, why we don't talk about certain things, why we do behave the way we behave. So just based on this conversation, it kind of put me in mind of that book because I'm listening to it now. I wanted to say that that book is phenomenal, but it's also traumatizing when it puts me in mind of it's not medical apartheid, but just hearing about the trauma that we have to deal with, and they have workplace racism in that book also. So I just wanted to just share that kind of put me in mind of what you kept reiterating throughout that broadcast is why we act the way we act, why we don't talk about certain things, because we have been traumatized. And it affects us. It affects our behavior. And that's all I wanted to share.
Two of Gus T's top five books all time referenced within the broadcast, Warmth of Other Suns, Medical Apartheid. The Warmth of Other Suns, that's two in a row. I think we played that yesterday with Sundown Town. Two in a row for the lovely Isabel Wilkerson. Any other folks have commentary that they would like to share?
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Just speaking of book studies, for some reason my wife won't come over and say it, so I'll say it. So obviously we have the situation that happened in New Zealand, and the person who suspected racist, or maybe proven racist at this point, that committed that act, he left a manifesto that I think is roughly, 70-odd pages, just like Dylann Roof. And maybe as a suggestion, maybe we should go ahead and do, for a book study, these manifestos. Just a suggestion.
How interesting. It's so many of them. We have Anders Breivik. We have Dylan Roof. We have Elliot Roger, if folks remember. Now, he's the racially ambiguous person in California that killed, I think it was like seven people. Dr. Welsing, we did a whole program with Dr. Welsing talking about him. He left a manifesto talking about his disgust at being not white. And then this suspected racist in New Zealand. It's quite a few of them that could be. Yeah, that would be interesting reading. Dylan Roof and Anders Breivik, that would be some interesting reading. Great suggestion for the book study. Someone would have to read now. Yeah, someone would have to narrate. So if we have folks that would be willing to volunteer to do narration of any of the manifestos, let me know. That's something, I guess Dylan Roof and Anders Breivik, I think, is long. That one might be a little too long to read. If I recall, like, that one is like 1,000 pages. Like, that one might be, yeah, that one might be too long. But I think Dylan Roof we could do. Elliot Rogers we could do. This fellow in New Zealand we'll have to look at. If we have any folks who would be down to volunteer to do the narration for some of these, let me know. And we'll see if we can add that to the book club. Great suggestion.
My gosh.
Stacy in the U. Let's see if I can show off how much I have learned on the plantation. So I think this is the little window where it is a 7-hour time difference, which is really going to hurt my head. So it is not 3:52. It should be 2:52 a.m. Saturday morning, London time. Stacy chiming in.
Hi, Gerson, to you and the rest of the callers. After that last offer, I had to add something. I had to meet with a non-white female this week, and somewhere in that conversation she brought up racism on the job. I didn't comment, however, oh well, for the most part I didn't comment, but she was telling me about a suspected racist that she used to work with. And she told me that he was more black than most black people. At which point I had to say, no, he can't be more black than a black person. And she goes, oh no, he really is. He really is. He's from New Zealand. I just didn't say another word. Next time I won't be offering any commentary. I will just perhaps give a and leave it at that. But I thought that was ironic given what's happened this week. I'll meet my longest.
He's from New Zealand. Wow. It doesn't get any better than tacky triple T's. Let's see. We have one person, if you have a final comment that you need to get in before we conclude, is there one person who has anything else that they need to share? I will assume folks are.
Elliot.
Oh, there we go. Ivy, yes, ma'am.
Just real quick, I definitely gotta throw this in. We've talked a lot tonight about what black people do. I will say this: nobody acts out as much as white people. That's where over 70% of the crime is coming from, the drugs and everything else. So no matter of whatever it is that black people do, white people. Nobody does it better. I'll mute my line. Thanks, Gus.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. Milwaukee's finest, Jeffrey Dahmer. I want to talk about street criminals. Anywho, we will be here tomorrow. Compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll catch up on news and notes from this past week, what happened in New Zealand, other interesting events over the past 7 days. If you have suggestions, thoughts, your own bits of codification, definitely tune in to share. Much obliged for all the folks who participated. I hope it was worthy of your Friday evening. Thanks to all the folks who emailed. Untiljustice@gmail.com. If you are not able or don't want to call in, but have thoughts to share on workplace racism or situation, untiljustice@gmail.com. We can share your commentary on the air. With that, again, much obliged. I hope it was worthy of your time and energy. Sobriety would be best, especially on the job. And again, I would not under any circumstances consume any sort of alcohol, intoxicants with coworkers, white or non-white. I just think that can present a lot of problems, unnecessary and easily avoidable problems. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up every time we are in a vehicle, passenger or driver, especially if it's in a work-related capacity. Let's do all that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. They are not a coon. Mentally compromised. That's classic, classic mentally compromised individual. We have all been mentally compromised. Try to have as much Black self-respect as possible when you are in contact with mentally compromised individuals, including yourself. Context of White Supremacy signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.